Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting from New Zealand, the beautiful little island-chained paradise with the Fukushima sun that gives everybody a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb which helps the economy, according to the Prime Minister who used to work for the Federal Reserve for 2 years. Of course, he would say that, wouldn't he? Especially when the country is now in more debt than it ever has been. Hey, wait a second. Isn't that the exact same thing that happened to the United States after Obama, who was incidentally a member of a blue party that got elected on 2008 by a platform of change, who was financed by bankers, $500 million or so, and then they implode the economy and get it into more debt than it's ever been? In fact, he loaned more money in his first term of presidency than all previous presidents of the United States combined! Which is exactly the same thing that the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, used to work for the Federal Reserve did. Combined! Does anybody else see a connection here? Does anybody else see these NATO trade deals and TPPAs and all of these other international agreements that are basically eroding every single nation's sovereignty? Have you ever thought that perhaps it might be a good idea once in a while to listen to voices from outside the normal mainstream spectrum where almost everything they tell you is the opposite of the truth? Don't you think so? Then please, ladies and gentlemen, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and subscribe to give a monthly donation to this broadcast. All bills get paid, we interview people every single day and make sure that their voices come out to you unfettered so that they can actually express themselves. Because I found, just like when you're partying, you find the best parts of any party that you've ever been to have not been the music, nor the booze. It's actually been those really contemplative conversations that you have with honest and intelligent people who feel comfortable to express themselves and listen to you express yourself reciprocally. Isn't it? Those are the best kind of parties, and that's what we do here on this show. There's only one rule, other than the FCC regulations perhaps, and that's to have fun, ladies and gentlemen. If we're having fun, we hope you're having fun too. So, without further ado, or as the Israelis say, without further ado, my very special guest today is Jerry Avalos. His websites are thehollowtree.com. That's the hollow, H-O-L-O, like a hologram, tree.com. And his other website involving the manufacturers, I believe, is IntrinsicEnergyInnovations.com. That's IntrinsicEnergyInnovations.com. Innovation, sorry. Now, you may recall, I think probably the start of 2014, I interviewed a couple of guys by the name of Thunder and Brad, the Thunder and Light team, who have a number of hologram products that they claim do all sorts of amazing things. And Jerry is of a similar field of research, and he hasn't listened to that interview, so we'll we'll have to forgive both of our mutual ignorance here and just get along like normal people, I guess. Jerry Avalos, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Vinny, for having me on. It's a real pleasure, and I've haven't had a chance to get on the air in a little bit, so it's refreshing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Would you be able to elucidate just a little bit about who you are, what you do, and the background of this hologram technology that a whole bunch of people are talking about?
Yeah, sure, no problem. My background actually it seemed kind of mundane and kind of weird at the same time. For all rights and purposes, I've just been here in Southern California all my life. I've always been a creative person, went to school for art and illustration. Shortly out of school, I got into fabrication with plastics and resin and prototyping of different products for the movie replica industry and model industry. And that's where I learned a lot about materials and hard engineering in a sense without necessarily having to go to school. But I've always have been intrigued with cutting-edge physics and psychology and where they merge. Myself, I was born a natural lucid dreamer, which actually bridges into intuitive applications, you can say. And so as I progressed on my path of knowledge and truth-seeking, as I'm sure you can relate to, Vinny, I also have done my stint as a internet radio host at different times. And so I just saw a lot of different fringe science and how it kind of comes together with all the different disciplines that I mentioned which inevitably got me here. So we're now doing something similar, as you mentioned, as the other company there, where we're using a type of radionic device, scalar device, with, as well as a couple of other applications relating to wave imprintation to do some fun stuff. And I guess it does kind of fall under, as far as we understand, the quantum mechanic heading, I guess you can say. And we actually do have long conversations, my associates and I, one being Jim Stewart, a Yale-trained physicist, then another one being Matt Pulver, who's a double bachelor from UCLA in math and physics, who works with Dr. Paul LaViolette. So we have like really, really involved science discussions about this, and it's pretty interesting stuff because while we know how certain things work, we're not claiming to know all the answers because it's just, it's very fascinating. So I guess you could say that's like a quick synopsis and a glib kind of way of my background and how I got to this.
Do we have somewhat of a layman's terms version for these hologram things that are, what are they? Imprinting scalar waves, right? Perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, imagine for a moment that everything in the entire universe, everything that's physical and exists in the 3D realm, is basically only there because there's certain frequencies, certain vibrations and what have you that actually make them appear solid and visible. Imagine for a moment that you had the ability to manipulate those frequencies. You had the ability to charge out a frequency of your own that would actually change the physical world around you. Imagine you could change heat, weather, cold, that kind of thing, and transmute them and make them different. Is that sort of what we're talking about here?
In a sense, it's once again, it's kind of difficult to put to exact terms, but it definitely has to do with frequency form, wave form, and as it relates to information. This is some of the things, really the where we're at in the research right now. We're looking at things like the modern academic understanding of gravity waves and seeing how this potentially works into what we're doing, because we're seeing a lot of correlations with what we call relative density. And this kind of works in, it's a fancy way to kind of say what a lot of people, I'm sure, in your audience are familiar with things like organite or even composite materials on aircrafts. You have a structure or a specific structure of coherence of varying materials that are conductive and non-conductive. And so that's, in a sense, what happens even on a small scale with the hologram. You have this sort of binary on-off that can be altered in a sense that there is information that's somehow entangled with these materials a little easier. I guess that's kind of what I would say is the most basic way to put it in terms of what we've been observing, but we're not saying for sure that's just how it's done. It's just, this is what we've been able to see and replicate.
I saw a presentation done by, Dr. Ken something, Ken Robertson, I think, yeah. Sir Ken Robinson, actually. And he was talking about education and how it relates, and essentially what education system is doing is trying to extinguish creativity and experimentation and what have you, because they're just trying to turn you into an industrialized slave kind of thing. And important thinkers and inventors usually don't go through those systems to a large degree, and if they do, it holds them back tremendously. So wondering what... In your educational background, what part has this had to play in ensuring that these devices work and that these ideas, are sound and technically viable?
Well, it's kind of funny. That's a good question. I usually don't get asked that. It's awesome. I would say in my actual structured education, design concepts was a huge thing for me. Going through college as a illustrator, and also taking being in the university, because I actually went to both like a junior college and a university, but I never graduated. Ironically enough, it's kind of funny. I have enough units, or I had enough units at one point for 2 degrees, but had absolutely none. But one of the things I found to be most useful is the design concept and understanding how to work with certain materials on a practical level, not beyond theoretical. Like, a lot of people are familiar with computer graphics, but it's knowing the difference of what happens when you go from the computer screen to a physical print, and it actually kind of turns mathematic. And so that helped a lot. And then, ironically enough, like high school physics, because a lot of the physics stuff never changed. You know, a lot of the theorems are all the same, the equations are all the same. You know, so looking at those and remembering them, because I did enjoy my physics class in high school, and I did well, and so that stuck with me. And so I did apply it for quite a while, practically. And I think it's a great course, physics. And I'm forgetting one there. Oh, another one, school-wise. But yeah, I would probably say those are the two major ones, honestly, because those, being able to meld this physical reality with sort of that imaginative reality is really what I think gives this crew here a cutting edge, because we all nurture that side of what we're doing, both the creative aspect and how it logically makes sense, too. You know, because if it's working, we should be able to explain some part of it, right?
And also another element is that gravity's not constant. Did you know that? Like a whole group of scientists came around and they were like measuring gravity's pull,
yeah.
And it's different from year to year, almost moment to moment. And so instead of acknowledging that gravity's not a constant, they just work out an average and say that's gravity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Although it keeps changing, it's stupid.
Yeah, because that's one of the things, and this is one of the reasons why I can't wait for our associate Matt Pulver to start having discussions about math and the esoteric aspect of it, because, you know, we have discussions about this, and even other speakers like David Sreda talk about how all measurements are arbitrary. So it's not really, like, as solid, quote-unquote, of math as people think. And that's why I love, you know, like I said, our staff mathematician, because he knows this. And so we recognize that we're setting arbitrary parameters to create something to quantify. Mm. And so, yeah, how you're saying the fluctuations in gravity is an overall net yield from basically a dynamic system, which is the Earth. It's fluid. It's moving. So all these different elements that are kind of churning inside of it create, you know, fluctuating EM fields. And the simple fact that we're spinning around something else, you know, kind of moves those around too. So, yeah, it's we have a basic general understanding, and the fun thing is that, you know, the calculations that we do use, you know, are fairly accurate. And so it's like the millisecond might be off, but that's the cool thing about it. You can at least get to a millisecond or something, you know. So then that's where the quantum aspect comes in, and then you're saying, well, what varied in that millisecond? You know, what really happened there? And that's one of the things that intrigues all of us here. We love understanding the fundamentals of reality and why there's these seeming limitations that continually get broken. I mean, we weren't supposed to fly, but there's plenty of planes in the air now, right? Almost too many. So,
yeah. On top of that, almost everybody who makes these great discoveries that changes what people think is possible wind up becoming legends, but yeah. Never legends in their own time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, really? But, really? And at least, I don't think that the appreciation for scientific discovery has become a marketing tool rather than a tool for expanding one's minds. Much in the same way that electronics and digital technology has massively increased the collective knowledge of the United States or any country, indeed the world, just having access to this kind of information, just for example, with Google. The problem is, and I saw this interesting phenomenon, let's say, with cell phones and numbers. How many people before cell phones could remember many, many people's phone numbers, home phone numbers off the top of their head? Virtually everybody could, right? How many can do so today? Most people don't even remember their own number. They get it all written down for you. So technology is this double-edged sword, I think, where you can either use it to expand and strengthen the mind or to replace it completely so that you don't even have one anymore.
Yeah, I think that you know, there's a lot of us out there looking for a symbiotic balance, really. Because it's possible, and I think that's one, how I mentioned earlier, I'm very much into intuitive discipline application. And myself, I've seen, I've checked my email, you can say in a clairvoyant state. My associates have done that. We've trained the people to do it. But we're not putting Google glasses on, and we're definitely not getting a microchip put into us, but we can still talk to the computer. So there's ways that we can naturally integrate with things. And I think that that's part of our evolution as a planet. I think that there is an inevitable sort of communication point that we're going to have to integrate with machines. And it's not going to require clunky implants. It's just going to supply our minds, just focusing it and knowing how. Because how we have mentioned the scalar wave aspect, that's our brains, that's what they're doing. They're creating scalar interference patterns constantly, nonstop. And that seems to attribute to the synchronization, you can say, of what makes us think we're inhabiting a physical reality. Because I'm sure you've ran into this, Vinny, and I'm sure many of your listeners have, to where there's so much space in between every single one of our atoms, it's like we're not even sure why we don't just pass through each other. This is kind of a strange phenomenon on that quantum level. And so that's some of the things that we examine, really.
Well, some people have used those discoveries about how simply your mind can actually change chemical compositions the structure of matter around you and actually control its function to a degree. They've used that as a justification for thinking that one human mind makes up absolutely everything and that nothing really exists and we're all just making it up. As if my human consciousness somehow cancels out all the other 7 billion odd consciousnesses that are running right now. I'm creating it all. When somebody comes up to me that's angry or something like that, it's because I'm actually really angry in part, and I'm just interpreting something that I came up with. You know, it's like this selfish insanity kind of thing. Like I'm God and I create everything. That's what it is. It's thinking you're God, is thinking you can create everything and that you can bend all reality to your will. Whereas I interpret these experiments and discoveries slightly differently. I think that it makes me, and by extension, the entire human race, into psychic antennas that are capable of manipulating microscopically some of the matter around us, that are capable of influencing the flow of time and many other aspects of our reality. Those aspects of reality are there, and they're there for everybody, right? They're the base premise. It means that we can change them if we try hard enough, but it doesn't mean we create it all ourselves. It doesn't mean we can, manifest and just change a cow into a horse in front of us or something magical or whatever. It's like micro changes in reality. And I think if everybody's capable of making their own micro changes in reality, then we can make the reality that we want collectively.
Yeah, and I think that how you mentioned about the Messiah complex, you can say that some people get when they experience this, I think this is them discovering their own power. And it's okay, everyone, because we all are fragments of the divine, all everything, unified field, whatever you want to call it. So we do have the power, in a sense, to do some profound things. But like you were mentioning, it's not like one person's will just imposes on everyone else's reality. One of the movies actually I point people to is to give examples of this. It's really a multiverse equation. And Men in Black 3 actually broach upon this. And for those who've seen it, they might remember one scene where essentially the K was leaving a tip, didn't leave a tip, which concerned the character you can see in the multiverse. And when he ran back and put the tip on the table, the meteor on the out that was going to hit the Earth just blew up. And so it's not the fact that the tip was left that made that meteor blow up. It's the synchronization to the reality which lowered the probability of that happening. So in that reality, basically the fact that he left the tip is more, it's closer to the reality where the asteroid didn't hit.
Which means that we live in a probabilistic reality where anything is possible, unlike a cannibalistic reality where anyone is edible.
Yeah, that's true enough. Yeah, and that's one of the things where how you're saying changing a horse into a cow, I mean, it might work. Maybe someone can create that synchronization, but it's not because they're powerful. I mean, that's one of the things when I do workshops, say, in lucid dreaming or even intuitive applications like remote viewing, I tell people it's not the viewer who's doing it. It's like it's an agreement between the awareness involved in this experience. So it's not, we're just a conduit sometimes.
Yeah.
So and that's like an honor.
This brings me to like another discovery is that matter has a consciousness.
Oh yeah. It has intelligence, has information. And that's one of the things that it's great in a sense for people like us too, where the Higgs boson experiment with the Big Hadron Collider, you know, they had to acknowledge what they called an information vector, which essentially proved to a degree the existence of something called the scalar field or information field. And so because there is inherent information in the structure it's a connotation of intelligence, absolutely, because it's going to want to act as itself, not something else, which shows that there's a certain degree of choice there one way or another. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because if you're observing the tiny particles and what have you, just the fact that you're observing them actually makes them behave differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
It means that doing an experiment on them can be very, very interesting and yield wildly different results depending on who's doing the experiment. It's kind of like if you have a biased Monsanto approval board or something like that at the FDA that has this particular perception of how this crop grows and doesn't cause huge tumors in rats and what have you, and they approve it, and it goes on through. Oh, that's great, but it's not frickin' reality.
Yeah, it's true. And this is where a lot of people have seen this kind of stuff demonstrated in a sense with what they call placebo effect or the nocebo effect. But everyone tries, in popular media and medical science, they want people just to disregard that as a fluke. But statistically, it's becoming more and more difficult for these drugs to beat a placebo. So what's that saying? That's saying exactly what we're talking about here, is that our minds, and especially what you were saying, Vinny, on a micro level, it's almost easier. And my personal theory on that has to do with exactly what we're talking about, the observer effect. Like, it's hard, like we're only ones in a lot of ways who are observing the internal changes of our body. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of easier on a quantum level because you're only dealing with, like, in a sense, a limited amount of observation to interfere with that sort of electron spin, like we've seen in double slit experiments and things like that. As opposed to like that cow into a horse. I mean, it's kind of even the fact that we're saying everything has its own awareness. You know, the grass that cow was standing on was pretty much aware that there was a cow there. I mean, I recognize that to some degree.
Yeah. Oh no, it's a cow.
Exactly. So it's a Holocaust to them when the cows come by. This does get into the observer effect, in which you can kind of say also relates to the entanglement principles that are being observed. And when we use those terms, I know that those usually has to do with specific experiments, and the vocabulary is kind of dicey for, you know, those who have earned their degrees out there listening to me say this. I understand that's a loose interpretation of entanglement principles, but statistically, from what we're observing, it's very similar. And when we have, say, when we get a picture from somebody who's having an issue medically, and we help them with our therapy to help, you know, the therapy that they're currently using with through their medical practitioners, and we see a positive response, you know, that maybe was going slower with their medication before, that's pretty interesting statistically. It's like, how did that happen? Especially if we're able to reproduce it, which we have been. That goes beyond just normal chance, you know, the 52% we like to kind of use. And I would say that our effect range is probably a good 70 to 85% on these things immediately. I mean, in terms of you can just kind of see it right away. And so it's really interesting stuff. And I think that, to me, what I'm observing in the mass culture, and even you can say the resistance put on certain technologies, you can see it lightening up for one reason or another, because they are too busy, or it works into some timeline projections already, I don't know. But we are seeing this because really it's not like a replacement system. It's actually, it's kind of like how you had mentioned too, the more we recognize what our common goals are and where we're agreeing, the more effective we are. And that works with this technology too. So it's not really in my interest as a manufacturer of this stuff to try to start competition. You know what I mean, because actually if we get products together of similar nature, they'd actually work better. And that's one of the things that we've observed in our tests using multiple, you know, items or sources of this information transfer. So we work that into our business model in the sense that we're not looking to put anyone out of business. We're actually just here to help. That's pretty much kind of how we look at things.
There was an experiment, I think, doing a, trucking, I think, and delivery of goods. And they had, I think, three different scenarios by which goods could be delivered. One, there would be a short road that's nice and flat and what have you, that has two gates, one on each end. In the first experiment, they gave one trucking company control over the front gate, and another one, the different company, had control of the front gate. So neither one of them could actually get through without the say-so of the other. And the alternative route was much longer and it took a lot more time. And the idea is to make as much money as you possibly can and do your runs in the shortest possible time. Now, the third experiment was when they shared control of the gates, and they had, strangely enough, a hell of a lot more profit to be made by working together than competing against one another. And I think it's a very profound experiment to show how people actually work together better than if they are trying to sabotage each other and compete with one another a lot of the time. I mean, let's say, for instance, you had two inventors sitting in a room together trying to come up with the best invention they possibly could. They'd probably together come up with a much better invention than either one of them could come up with on their own, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the analogies I give, is that, you know, the best pieces of art that we appreciate, like movies and music, weren't done by one person. They're usually, especially movies, they're done by, you know, hundreds, sometimes thousands of people. And those are the best products. They're not the ones that just one person just did all the filming, all the writing, all the, you know what I mean? It's just not how it's done.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then here, there's some competition between you and Thunder Light team, and based on this hologram technology. Could you explain what this holographic kind of scalar-ish infusion really is, like in terms of how it's constructed?
But to the best of my knowledge, I can. It is based off of what earlier incarnations and of the discipline called radionics. This is an evolution of that. And so what that does is it has to do specifically with interference patterns. And it's not just interference patterns using like electrical waves or sound waves or even light waves. It's a conglomerate that creates what I guess you can say is that information vector that we mentioned with some of the other experiments in modern academics, to imbue correlating waveforms with the desired effect. So in the sense of, say, a body, you know, like one of the tests we recently had done, which was great, one of the products that we're using right now is meant to help balance the bioelectrical field and conductivity aspect of the person who's wearing it. And there's different types of, I guess you can call them aura cameras, but essentially they're measuring the conductivity levels of your skin. And so we had seen with the application of our product, someone's brightness go up, in a sense that conductivity go up quite a bit. In terms of shade values, I would say it was a good 6 to 8 shade values brighter in some cases. So you could say that
out of a total, how many shades have they got there? You know, like more than Ray-Ban?
More than what? I'm sorry?
More than Ray-Ban or Dirty Dog? Because they sell shades?
Oh, I don't know, maybe. But I would say like it's in terms of like the overall brightness increase, we have to kind of look at that and do a pixel value.
Well, you know, like on Predator, how you can see people's heat and what have you,
yeah.
And different heat zones come up with different colors, like red, exactly, would be the hottest, or white would be the hottest, or something like that.
Yeah.
You're talking about going from light blue, which is the coldest, to like green, red, or purple, which is getting warmer.
Some, or it's kind of like with a lot of these, what it does is if the person's overall shade is like the orange or and the white or something like that, it's like kind of dim, and then it's like sort of turning the dimmer up, and so it just got brighter. So it might be a lighter shade of that color in a sense, but it's actually a it's showing the amplitude increase is what it's doing in terms of the measuring. So it's actually just getting lighter, brighter.
Is it showing an amplitude increase, or is it actually, I don't know, having a clarity, right? Kind of like if you've got the dial on your radio just a little bit off, you get that kind of static interference, and when you put the dial dead on, that's when it's ready to receive the signal properly.
That could very well be the case too, or both of them. You know, this is one of the things that we're looking to test more of, so we know for sure.
Like the disruption of signal interference, you know, like getting rid of interference.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, almost like a packet loss situation on the internet. Yeah, that could be very well be the case too. And I think that this is what we love tests. Like our crew loves doing tests. We have a lot of, you know, scientists, and I kind of jokingly refer to my friends and colleagues who have degrees as my pedigrees. So my pedigrees are all of our pedigree people are working on this because we love it. We love data. We love to verify what we're doing because we don't want to sell stuff that we're not confident in because we know those types of people and we just don't agree with that. Like when you make unsubstantiated claims, there's no data to back it up. You know, it's just not good. And unfortunately, I'm sure you've seen this too, Vinny, yourself in this community, how there's a lot of people just trying to make a buck off of people's hopes and fears. And it's just not cool.
I think people make the mistake of because you've left the corporate world, you've left the scumbaggery behind personally, that you don't bring any of that scumbaggery with you into this movement.
Oh yeah, and I think, and I see it all the time, a lot of, I mean, because we're lucky here in Southern California, it's probably one of the biggest conglomerates of holistic, metaphysical, conspiracy aware people. And so there's conventions, fairs here all the time. And so you see a lot of people who are new and just waking up to a lot of the facts, and you have to tell them, it's like, hey, this person seems like they got everything together, but they don't. Okay? So don't just take everything with a grain of salt. Always have your discernment meters on. Don't believe me, please, until you see me or my actions are backing up what I'm saying. it's Wild West, you know, in a lot of ways, very literally out here. So we have everything out here. We have the best of the best and some of the worst with the mega corporations too, with headquarters right here, you know, so it can be very strange in this neck of the woods. So, I don't mind sharing with your audience here. I mean, we've had, you know, mysterious explosions in our manufacturing place. At least one, at the very least, you could tell it was very strategic. And it wasn't, you know, any safety thing that wasn't observed on our part, as far as we know, and what we've been able to investigate. And it was weird how the authorities handled it, too. And so it was pretty obvious that someone was sending a message. And, yeah, we got the message. It's okay. You know, obviously, if they wanted to really stamp everyone out, they would. So it's not the situation.
Well, but I think they try to negotiate and warn you first before they assassinate you. So as soon as somebody actually starts to tell you, you know, stop doing what you're doing or we'll kill you or your family or something like that, then I think you can make a decision about when to stop. But if it's just suspicious and you're kind of like you don't really know or what have you, then, you know, you'll be right for now.
Yeah,
provided you watch your step.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing. I grew up in Southern California, so I'm used to dealing with certain scoundrel elements. And I know that ultimately, if someone really wants to get you, they don't warn you. So that's the other thing. So if there's a warning, I'm concerned about being nice. And it's usually coming from someone lower down the rung of the ladder. Because right now, I mean, I know that there are some people that don't necessarily like what we're doing, but we're not going at it with a bad attitude. And I think that's ultimately what's keeping everyone alive and going forward here, as opposed to some of the other people that you do see, even in this industry, who are struggling constantly for years because they're going at it with a FU attitude to these people, and that's not going to get anywhere. You know, like how we're saying with, you know, in terms of working with what we agree on. Let's work with that. We can disagree all day, you know, but there are certain things we can agree on. I think that I can see in a sense why there was apprehension by certain powers that be, I guess you can say, to allow some of this technology out, or even Tesla's technology out, quite honestly, because, you know, you and I, Vinny, we're not going to weaponize some of these things, but other people, they are going to. And you can, as different.
I don't know. I might weaponize it, you know, it'd be fun.
Well, okay, yeah, you might, but I'm guessing that you're not going to try to vaporize your neighborhood. Some people might just do that. You know what I mean? Or they might.
If I had enough weed to vaporize out an entire neighborhood and the conventional I would have maybe emotional or moral issues before I did it, but I would do it.
Okay, I can see that situation. That's a little different, but that's cool. But I mean, that is a genuine concern, though, because I mean, that's why that they don't even let, you know, PS3s and PS4s and Xboxes go to certain countries, because they rip out those processors and try to use them to guide their little rockets and stuff. So you kind of got to watch out for that, especially as a manufacturer.
Yeah, that's right. PlayStation 3 is now the newest source of terrorist rocket launches worldwide.
I'm not saying everyone's using that, but I was saying theoretically, I'm sure some people are ripping out those processors and because they're powerful processors. I don't know if I was going to make some kind of weird device, and this is one of the things that I'm sure, Vinny, you probably have had contacts come to you too. They'll tell you that almost like every day some James Bond stuff goes on with some kind of supervillain too. It's not just like the dastardly people who are selfish and power hungry that you have to worry about, but then there's genuine psychopaths. You know what I mean? And they do these things. You know, and I've heard this from my contacts too, and it's like you can see it. I mean, we've met enough characters, I'm sure, in bars who if you gave them a nuclear bomb, they'd probably try to use it. You know what I mean?
I don't know if you find out some of the people like that in bars, but then again, nobody sells nuclear weapons in your average pub crawl, do they?
No, it's a hypothetical.
I had too many beers tonight. Can you hold my nuclear device for me? I need it to go to a safe place. You know?
I go to the keys, yeah, and the launch code folder.
Yeah, yeah, like James Bond had like 5 too many martinis that were shaken, not stirred.
Honestly, Vinny, some of the stories I've heard from people who I'm pretty sure are telling me the truth and I've had enough confirmation, I wouldn't doubt that that's happened. You'd be surprised. This is how I know there's divine guidance after some of the stories I've heard or divine intervention, because it's like we should have been vaporized I don't know how many times with some of the people who are in charge and doing some of these jobs.
Oh, yeah. These people are like drug addicts and like crazy people, isn't it? Look around you, the entire society. Just think about how messed up it is. And you can honestly tell me that completely crazy people aren't in control of things?
Well, I think
how would everything get so completely crazy if that wasn't the case? I don't understand. Nobody has the power to make things as nuts as they are.
Yeah, I guess some people just call themselves bold, but yeah, some. I think you do have to be a little crazy to do some of these jobs. I know I wouldn't want to do some. I mean, you know, like jumping through certain space things, or you know, oh yeah, portals. I mean, everyone talks about portals and stuff as happy fluffy things in a lot of the metaphysical realm, but they're not all happy fluffy. So just a weird reality.
You could get shredded the atoms from. You could shred the atoms from your bones, son, by stepping into the wrong one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
I was interviewing Andrew Bruchago, who's allegedly a member of Project Pegasus. You know, the chrononauts and teleportation experiments that they're doing in the late 70s, early 80s, I think. He teleported into a square from east coast to west coast, and there was a fountain, and one of his colleagues who jumped with him landed in the fountain, and you know how there was a layer of water over his ankles, right? And he stood there for just a second, and then he slid right off his ankles, right? His ankles were just left there in the pool, like something in the field of the water hadn't occurred properly with the jump, and so it tried to merge the water level with his ankles and cut them right off.
Yeah, I'd heard Andy's story. I've met Andy a couple times too, and interesting character. And there is apparently some very strange hardware out there. I mean, myself personally, I have a weird entanglement story with some of the military abduction phenomenon too, relating to projects out of Edwards Air Force Base. And
you worked on Edwards Air Force Base?
Personally, I've never, as far as I know, I've never consciously enlisted and walked in there, but I know that that base, because of what I thought were just dream experiences, but probably weren't. So I may have very well physically been there, but I never physically actually like enlisted or anything like that. I just know what could that you, base is.
Could you describe the experience?
Oh, yeah. For as long as I can remember, there had always been this sort of lab room in that dream realm I mentioned earlier as being a natural lucid dreamer. I just didn't know that you weren't supposed to be awake on that side. And so this lab room was always kind of strange to me, and it always led to very weird things and what I thought were just games. I thought I was playing games on the other side in that reality. But as time went on, I found out these games would actually correlate to a lot of the projects. And what confirmed that it was Edwards for me was when this one, you can say it's a bilocational experience, because I knew I was sleeping and I was in my bed. But I also knew I was inhabiting another body that wasn't necessarily mine. And I was watching, it was a test flight of a NASA space vehicle that was supposed to have flown in the 70s or something like that. And I was watching this thing being pulled out over there, and everyone kind of knew it was just a bunch of crap. And so they're like, hey, it's going fine. And as I'm walking in this experience, I'm going towards this tunnel. And I realized if I kept heading down this way, that I was going to reach that lab room. And so that next morning, essentially, when I woke up and I was looking at the news, there was that test flight out of Edwards, you know, things like that. I'm like, oh, okay, this is getting kind of weird now. And so that's when it really kind of dawned on me that this just wasn't my fantasy, you know, or like some weird, cool game, or, you know what I mean? It was just too many things started falling in place then, in terms of what I've heard from other people who've had these experiences or even enlisted and have been part of intelligence communities. Because a lot of things do relate to things like the trip chair and those kind of simulations like that. And as well as other, not just remote viewing programs, but also what's kind of known as remote influencing. That was a very large part of it. So, I mean, talking about this stuff actually got me in trouble for a while too, but at this point, it's like, it's all in posterity. I have other interviews about this. And a lot of more of it's coming out from other people. So, and
this reminds me a lot about what Donald Marshall was talking about the Vril Society and their cloning programs and psychic transportation of consciousness into clone bodies while the living person's asleep, like say in their apartment in LA or something like that. They're somehow capable of actually transporting that consciousness into a cloned body of you that they've got in an underground facility where they can have sex with you or get you to perform party tricks for them or something like that, like real sick stuff he was talking about. But it has some similarities with what you're just saying.
Yeah, honestly, it's the same kind of same story. He's one of the people that have seemingly seen something very similar to I have. Because, yeah, I don't know. I can't say I know for sure that these are clones and all this and that, but I can see how that could be applicable. And I can see, even just with the science that we're doing and multiverse weirdness, I can see how you can sort of like that movie Free Jack, when they pull this body from the past, and then it would be this dude, but it's not really him. He's technically died in his reality, but it's here's that body. So there's all that kind of weirdness. That doesn't even get into ET stuff. You know what I mean? Because then ET stuff just gets even more zany. Yeah, these programs are pretty weird. And because I know for myself, you know, I know there was definitely, I do remember there was ritual stuff. There was a lot of weird training. There was a lot of just ugly things. But a lot of times, most of my time in that sort of environment was spent in the games, like fighting, like kind of controlling armies. I mean, it was that's like the movie that just came out, Ender's Game. I had read that book when I was a sophomore in high school, because the book's been out for a while. And it was like my catcher's in the rye, you know what I mean? I was like, I couldn't stop reading it. because it just sounded too familiar. I'm like, oh, wow, this is just too strange. Because I do remember what I called the game board, but it wasn't just like, oh, I'm fighting aliens in space. It's how does that relate through time in this reality, and how, what do we have to move over here to make that less probable in 30 years? And so it's, it wasn't just like what people say, like, oh, it's just blowing things up and this and that. No, it was hardcore multiverse calculations that, yes, you are immersed in, and yes, there is a sort of adventure aspect of it and all this other stuff, but ultimately it moves down, it comes down to like that proverbial tip on the table, like we're talking about with Men in Black 3. So it's not, I don't have this grand wild of a story because I just don't see myself that way, and I don't think, I honestly, I don't have, I've processed a lot of anger and a lot of stuff from that. Like, I don't have the violation feeling anymore and all that stuff because I see it. It made me good at what I'm doing now. What I'm doing now is helping a lot of people.
Well, so and in fact, that's another part, I think, that proves the point of the micro-influence of reality, because anybody can look at the reality of, say, abuse or neglect or something and appear that that will have a physical altercation, right? You'll have a permanent psychological disability for the rest of your life. Like, for me, it was working. Working gave me so much trauma that now when I go for a job interview, a proper job interview, I have a panic attack, right? I just physically can't do it. It has an actual effect on me. And so what's happening here, I think, is that if you've had these kind of transportations of consciousness or this violation sensation, as you were talking about it, just as I've managed to transmute my bad work history into a good working career where I can help a lot of people who've had the same kind of problems as I have, you've created a solution that can actually help others with the problems that you've got, yet neither of us, I think, will actually ever truly be able to forget or forgive or completely get over these things that have happened to us, nor would we want to, because it is the importance of those sensations that makes us do what we do and do it so well and actually feel that compassion for others that is necessary for them to get past their traumas, which we could not.
Yeah, definitely. And I know for myself, I can definitely forgive, but yeah, definitely not forgetting, because it's wise. It's wise to know the real pitfalls out there, because that's one of the things, I mean, I'm sure some of your listeners have looked into this and maybe some haven't, but you'd be surprised how frequency interaction is utilized by the powers that be, whatever you want to call it. That's why the Snowden thing was such a big deal, is he gave everyone a little glimpse into how they're able to tap into stuff. One of our colleagues, Jeff Harvey, been doing this kind of work for years and years and does well at it, one of the best. He was in the naval communications back in the day, and he was saying in the 70s, like, he knew how to basically tap into someone's power lines to hear what they're saying in the room. And so if you can tap into this, hear stuff from your power lines, you can also send stuff from your power lines. And so this gets into all other kinds of manipulation. And so let alone how to triangulate you and who you actually are. So this kind of the plausibility of something like myself and what Donald was saying about tuning into you in a sense of tapping into your awareness when you're in one place and going another, it actually becomes a lot more feasible when you start seeing everything as like a sine wave. If you duplicate that sine wave, you're duplicating part of that awareness, just like we've been talking about with the manipulation of matter in this technology, or with our minds on a micro level with chemicals. So it's the more kind of aspect.
Yeah. It reminds me of the shamanistic story about the wounded healer. Have you ever heard about this?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's kind of it, you know. You can't make what happened to you not happen, so you kind of just have to deal with it and get on with life, I guess. But usually it helps if you're not just getting on with life by yourself, you know, if you're actually part of something, if you're helping other people. I think my wife, I told her the other day, you know, she's like doing a gardening business and things, a bit of a downturn, real financial stress. We had a big fight and everything. And then we kind of realized why we were so upset. It's because we were just under stress and we weren't helping people while we were doing it. You know, I was kind of like depressed and stopped editing my shows. And she was kind of in the same situation as well, all because of this financial bleeding on us. And we both realize that, you know, actually we've both got innate talents to help people, and we can't help ourselves at the moment. So how about we help somebody else to make ourselves feel better?
Yeah, definitely. Share the wisdom and share the knowledge. And that's one of the things, part of the intuitive applications and discipline I've looked into is various traditional shamanic techniques. And, the aspect of the shaman being one of the common monikers that you hear in different cultures is that everything happened the way it was supposed to. So, man, it kind of embodies what you're talking about, like in relation to not being able to change what's happened to you, but recognizing what happened to you is what is giving you what you have now, and you can make, and the tools that you have now. And that's why it happened, because you've gotten better from it. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's put up a bridge or something, why would you put up a bridge that hasn't been strength tested? You know? It's dangerous, isn't it? And I think people avoid suffering. They avoid pain, hardship, and what have you. And they're really afraid of it, you know? I mean, sure, why wouldn't you be? But at the other end of the spectrum, there's something valuable there. If you hadn't have to suffer to obtain knowledge that you have, what value does that knowledge really have?
Fair enough. You know, and that kind of works in that saying, nothing worthwhile is easy. Like you had mentioned, that, you know, not why would you build a bridge and not test it? And that's definitely something that we do here. We have a philosophy we agree with on a personal and professional level. You know, that's why I say we love testing everything we do. And we like, being clear with ourselves. Because I think that's the thing, especially with this technology, how we had mentioned the entanglement aspect, is I'm sure that your listeners are getting an idea of who I am from my voice, you know, no matter what I'm saying. And you're seeing that if we're making it, that means, yeah, some aspect of myself is entangled with that project, as well as the rest of our associates. So we're aware of this. So we don't want to necessarily transfer any of our stuff to anyone else. And so we make sure we're in a particular mind frame and we're making our product. And we have different protocols in terms of technology to help assist that as well. Because we're not here just to make money. We're here to, like you said, make, do things better, you know, share some joy, share some knowledge, you know, help people out. You know, and so we can't really do that if we're not really, you know, working on ourselves first. You know what I mean? That just makes us hypocrites. So that's a huge part of what we're doing and why I feel that we're effective at what we do. It's not so much just because we have, you know, fancy technology. The technology is awesome. I gladly say one of the machines that we use is the SC5 1000. It's an immaculate machine. But that machine is only as good as the operator. Kind of like if you bought an amazingly awesome guitar with, you know, expensive inlays, it doesn't matter if you can't play it. You know what I mean? So it's a similar kind of concept.
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention that. I mean, my mate Mikhail is my guitarist for our band, and we have another mate of ours guitar, and it just can't tune. And the other guy's like a really terrible guitarist. We came up with this idea for a movie called Guitar Exorcist, that a guitar gets possessed by the bad playing habits of its previous owner, kind of thing. And it terrorizes a Christian Mexican family or something like that. Like it used to belong to some really terrible mariachi. Like you just never even tuned this instrument. And every now and again, coming out of the room, they just hear this really bad guitar sound. It's just like, what is that? It's awful. It sounds like it's coming from the pit of hell. And it was. It was a possessed guitar.
As well as you know, Vinny, that's gold. Okay. That's a golden idea. I think you should go with it.
Yeah. It would be classic, you know. I mean, casting would be interesting. I mean, who would you have to play the guitar Exorcist, you know? The power of Van Halen compels you! The power of Jack Van Black. Halen compels you!
Yeah, Jack Black.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, he's kind of born for the role, actually, now that I think about it, because after the Pick of Destiny, Tenacious D and what have you, I think this is just a natural move.
Yeah, it's School of Rock, too. Right there.
Yeah, the career aspects are endless. All right, well, that wraps us up for the first hour, ladies and gentlemen. weird note there. And we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with my very special guest, Jerry Avalos, formerly of Alamos Labs, I'm just joking, by the way. We'll be right back.
Special people change. How many lives are living strange? Where were you when we were getting high? Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball. Where were you when we were getting high? Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide, in a champagne supernova in the sky. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide, in a champagne supernova, a champagne supernova in the sky.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's a listener-supported broadcast that gives you, access to important thinkers and people from around the world at no cost, right? You don't have to donate anything, but there's a proviso. If you do donate to support the show, make sure that you have all your bills paid and make sure your kids are fed and so on and so forth. You can't take care of other people unless you're taking care of yourself, or at least, in theory. Technically, I kind of take care of people from all over the world that have all sorts of problems with agencies that are far outside my control that I actually really can't help them with other than listen to their story. And I think that actually helps quite a bit to have somebody there who's not calling you a crazy person and arguing with you with stupid BS. This is also a very biased broadcast, all right? Don't make no mistakes, ladies and gentlemen. One person came up to me at Occupy Auckland once and he says, Vinnie, I really like your news and the things that you put out because it's totally unbiased. And I go, that's absolutely not true. It's completely biased, but it's just the kind of bias that you need. we have a guest in here. Hey, I might not even agree with my guest. This is another thing. I was just actually wondering about this, a moral conflict, all right? Am I being emotionally or morally rudderless by giving everybody a fair shot on the show, not second-guessing them, and just kind of playing the jovial, fun radio show host so that they can feel comfortable enough to elucidate their feelings? That's the intention. But it might in some cases, with people that I don't agree with, I won't actually disagree with them on air. Again, that points that we agree on. Aspect. That's the kind of thing it is. So if you hear something on this show and you hear me agreeing with it, doesn't necessarily mean I actually totally agree with it. I might be entertaining the possibility, but don't make decisions on your life based upon interviews that I've done with people on this show. You really do need to research this, all right? If you hear about somebody here first and you've never heard of them before, don't change your life based on one thing that they've said. This is your opportunity to actually look at that person more closely, have a look at all of their other works and whatnot. That's why we get so many different people on here, some people who have never even been on radio before, because some of their things that they're talking about actually have a lot of value. And some of them maybe not so much, but it's up to you, the listeners, to go and research and practice some form of discernment yourself. I'm just the douchebag with a microphone making everything fun for everybody so that you can at least hear some of the information that is out there in the accumulated existence of mankind that the mainstream media shuts out or shuts down. That is my purpose. and I'm a slave to that cause. If you want to pay me for my slavery, that'd be very nice. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and give some of your hard-earned slave-taxed wages to me so that I can fight the New World Order, ignorance, and scumbaggery in your stead. If you don't have the 14, 15, 16, sometimes 18-hour days free to expose scumbaggery like I do, and that's only because of your support, by the way, then support somebody who's actually doing it in your stead. You know, just play your part. Everybody has different parts to play, and all of them are important, because it's like a machine with all these thousands upon thousands of wheels and cogs and levers and what have you. If one little part of that machine breaks down, the whole part of the machine breaks down with it. Okay? The micro to the macro. Oh, yeah, bro. That's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It all rhymed quite a bit, didn't it? My very special guest is Jerry Avalos. His websites are thehollowtree.com. That's hollow, H-O-L-O, as in hollowback, brother. And also intrinsicenergyinnovations.com. So, Jerry, welcome back.
Thanks.
You had a direction you wanted to take this in, didn't you?
Yeah, because I just realized that we kind of glossed over some of the things that we actually do. So I'm sure there's some people going like, well, what do you guys actually make? Some of the things that we make is a type of treated jewelry, like I mentioned, that it will increase the conductivity levels, or balance the bioelectric field, I'm sorry. Then the other one that is really fun for us too, because it's really where we start getting any empirical foothold on what we're doing here, is with cars, actually. And what we're doing is we're using our, in a sense, passive wave generator system to help reduce the noxious particulates from cars and diesel trucks and such. So this has been just intriguing work, because for, once again, those who are familiar with, say, with the, you know, stuff, you know, called organite, it's a similar kind of process, because it's a composite material of metals, crystals, and a resin, and then we treat it with our information waves. And essentially, without having to have a chemical interaction, without necessarily even having it next to the gas tank, just in approximation, about 10 feet or so, you'll see the results with this thing is that it'll reduce the pollution coming out of the tailpipe if you put it on a smog meter. If you actually put it with a 5-gas analyzer, you're going to see the NOx go down. You don't get failures on that. That's one of the things that we guarantee. And we've done some interesting tests with that. And there's a lot of different, well, I don't necessarily say a lot, but there's a handful of other companies that have similar systems that we do with the scalar treatment systems.
Would you be able to be more specific about the tests that you've actually done in order to verify the product, the effect of this device that you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. What we do is we've done multiple before and after tests at state certified smog shops here in California. And the smog board here in California is fairly stringent on its taxpayers, as we know. So it's pretty elaborate kind of setup that they have all the cars go through. So it's a battery of sort of tests at idle and at different RPMs. And then they have basically a type of probe that's in the tailpipe. They call it a 5-gas analyzer because, well, some of the things it looks at is hydrocarbon, CO2, O2, noxious particulates. And I forget one there. But and oxygen levels, actually, I suppose. So we're looking at these, and we're doing a before test. So we have a car come in. We get a baseline from it without applying our device. And we let it do its thing. We let the cat get hot and everything, and then test it. And then after that, we let it sit, let the catalytic converter go ahead and cool off again, and then introduce our technology, and then do it after. And so BioRights and Purposes, it should pretty much be the same. Within negligible range. And so what we're seeing, though, on average is 30% plus reduction in noxious particulates. Sometimes it's huge. Sometimes even we've had, and this is kind of where, for some people, the selling point is passing the smog test. But for some people, if they're spitting out, you know, 1,200 parts per million of noxious particulates, and we knock that down 700 parts, it's still going to fail. But we still did over half reduction in noxious particulates. That was quite a few parts per million of these different nitrates, and, you know, basically NO and NO2 is what NOx is, for those interested in knowing what that is. And so we're seeing this change. And we've done this multiple times now. I'm not sure how many. We have a handful of them that we were able to document very specifically and have good records of it. And some of that is available on our website, the Holotree and Intrinsic Energy Innovations. And on our the Facebook, too, our Facebook pages, we actually have some. A lot of times the updates sometimes go there for some of the raw stuff. So for those of you interested in raw data, a lot of times we'll post it there, and then we post the easier to view versions, you know, on our website. Because we like publishing as much of the data as we can, because we know verifying that we're doing something for one, and then two, we like to include people on the process. We like to include our potential clients and on what's going on here. You know, it's very exciting technology, and we're not here to say, "Oh, it's ours, it's mine, we can't share it." It's not like that at all. Because we want people to know, because it also gets into, what purchases they're going to make and recommendations. So with this gas technology, we love feedback in particular, because we've noticed certain makes and models work better for whatever reason. Because sometimes there is, added benefits that we don't guarantee, but we've observed these effects. So I want to just make that clear that I'm not guaranteeing what I'm about to say right now. We're just saying we've observed these effects with irregularities depending on makes, models, whatever. But some people do get an increase in their gas efficacy, for instance. Mm-hmm. We've seen as much as 50% increase. We haven't figured out how to stabilize that specific aspect yet, though. But we've seen it in some cars, and that's the significant point that we're finding out, because we have discussed our technology and integration of technologies with different, you know, you can say major labels in the automotive industry. And they know too with efficacy. We talked with people who have products certified in that, and they're kind of saying it's a red herring because of how people drive. It's like, once you find out you're saving gas, you tend to just drive faster or more. And it's kind of like, poof, goes the savings, especially with people who really care, like how you made mention with the diesel industry and the trucking industry. It's like, they would love that, right? But everything has shown, as soon as they know they get better gas, they're driving faster. So meanwhile, the pollution is still going up. So this is why everyone is focusing on the pollution and trying to knock that down. And so you have, and like I said, we're seeing conventional, in a sense, companies, additive companies, you know, hardware companies, they're looking at this too. So everyone is trying to do something for the air. So, I mean, hopefully that helps your listeners rest a little more sure that there is stuff being done to help counteract the pollution and chemtrails and stuff by more people than I think everyone realizes. And it is exciting, because we're seeing it change. We have the hard numbers. So it's not like we're just guessing here, you know, things like that. I know we've seen it. We've actually done test too with a diesel opacity meter, which was really kind of profound, because how, in a sense, when we're talking about the exhaust systems like that, it's a very small microscopic level is how they're measuring this. The opacity meter, diesel particulate opacity meters, are essentially like a camera, in a sense. It's watching how much smoke is puffing out. Because they want to make sure that smoke level keeps going down and down. They want diesels not to be polluting like that. And so we had a chance to have a test at one of these opacity meter makers. And we saw, I believe it was a 30% reduction once again. So it kind of correlated with what we've been able to stabilize. So this camera literally saw 30% less particles coming out of this vehicle than they had ever seen before. And this is without having to put anything in the gas tank, you know, either in or on. You know, this isn't something that goes in line in the fuel, so you don't have to bolt on anything at this time with this version. This is made for consumers for easy installation. All you got to do is put it in proximity anywhere in the car. one of the tests that we have published right now is with one of the graphics that I'm sure some listeners will find was actually done with one of our pieces sitting in the front passenger side of the vehicle. So it wasn't even really that close to the gas tank, which would have been, you know, more towards the middle of the back seat. So it's showing that we're actually also able to create an effect area, an area that's being affected, because we're not really sure it's radiating out or it's creating a field of influence, because it's not, it doesn't seem like there's much that can block it, like a field, like those radiators.
Have you thought about making perhaps something that would cover, say, an entire city center?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely feasible. And this for ourselves, I mean, this is why we have a lot of our own sort of filtration devices, I guess you can say, that we're testing, that we like to release as soon as possible. And actually on the HoloTree, part of that is actually released for free. We have a couple of different, there's a digital version. We have the background, the HoloTree background, then we have just the raw hologram that can be used in your own images if you know how to use Photoshop or something to embed it. It doesn't even necessarily have to be viewed. It doesn't have to actually have to see the hologram necessarily. Just embed it in the image itself, and you'll have this effect, which is what we call our soothing scalar code set, which is meant to help just relax, you know, ease tensions, different types. And on that page, you can see some of the frequencies that we put in there, because we want to utilize things like that, like these wallpapers for cell phones or your computer, as a way to sort of give out free demos, really, because it's kind of just a pain, honestly, with some other delivery systems where they want you to change your cell phone wallpaper to hold next to a gas tank or hold next to your water for this amount. It's like, no, it's such a pain. I've had experience with those kind of things. And it's like, it's at one point, no one's going to want to pay for that, because it's like, this is so inconvenient. So we're just like, let's just get it free. And so that way everyone can experience the technology. So they can do that with their gas tank eventually. We haven't released the free gas one yet, but the next one might be something like that biofield boost, as we're calling it. So people can sample that and do their own tests with their cell phone at some of these fairs with the Aura cameras and such, too, by using their cell phone. Because that would even show, too, that there's a positive benefit of having that person's cell phone next to it, as opposed to the negative ones you usually see with cell phones. Like, you know, this is my guess. I'm not sure exactly. I'm not guaranteeing that part, but that would just be my guess, judging from what we've seen already with some of the tests with these digital versions of this technology. But getting back to the gas stuff, one of the most intriguing tests, I would say, that I think especially those out there who are physicists and scientists, we would love your thoughts on this one, because one of the most sort of freaky tests we've seen with this technology, which essentially, if we had to just be skeptical and layperson, it kind of just looks like a piece of plastic. It looks like a random piece of plastic is kind of what our product looks like. And what we did on a couple of tests now was we've had just to see if we affect gas itself. If it goes, it doesn't have, see if it actually has to go through the combustion chain, or is there some physical properties of the gas being changed, like we even were talking about earlier, Vinny, changing, you know, things on a chemical level like that. And so one of the tests was done with the car off, and the probe for the 5-gas analyzer stuck directly down the gas tank's hose that leads into the gas tank. And then our technician got a baseline for that, and we saw the hydrocarbons just shoot up like crazy, 20-some thousand parts per million to 10,000, going zany, 5,000, 20,000, just go wacky. And so then he introduced the product, our little pieces, and you put it just by where the nozzle is, and you see the hydrocarbons normalize about 2,000 parts per million. So not only did it stop fluctuating, it went down a lot. Without having to go through a combustion chain, the car wasn't on. And so then we were saying, well, is it because it's in the car? Is that why this is maybe being affected? So let's go ahead and just get a spare gas can and do the same test. And so we did the same test. This one, the hydrocarbon went off the chart of the meter, so we couldn't even get a baseline on it. But the noxious particulates on this one, that actually did stabilize at about 280 parts per million, if I remember correctly. And we introduced the technology, you know, which essentially is these pieces of plastic. We jokingly call it magic plastic. And we go and we put this on top of the gas can and watch over about the course of about 15 minutes, the noxious particulates went down by half, so 140 parts per million. And so those kind of tests like that had myself, you know, my associate Jim and our other associate Matt, it's got us scratching our heads because we're like, what exactly attributes to that? And we think we might be getting a little closer to a theory and some new experiments to test that. But it's one of those conundrums. So I was going to say, I'd love to hear the take on anyone in your audience, yourself, really, what you think might be going on, because it's to think about what energy it would take to change that state of matter like that, let alone the odds of it changing in the way we wanted it to, are like phenomenally high. It's not going to happen. And you need phenomenally high amounts of energy, or at least what it takes to go through the combustion chain of the car. And none of that was present in these tests, but yet we saw this effect. So pretty profound stuff.
Well, maybe it's kind of like, how do I put it? It's kind of like everything that travels through the air has resistance. And what might be happening here is kind of like in a combustion chamber, I think. I think this is how the vaporizing carburetor was supposed to work. Correct me if I'm wrong. But if you kind of make the particulates of gas smaller, somehow force them to compress themselves together into smaller particulates as they're being squirted in through fuel injectors or carburetors and what have you, it actually increases the efficiency and reduces emissions to virtually zero. So maybe what the device is actually doing is compressing the particles to a degree using frequency so that it might perhaps, I don't know, make the particles smaller and more tightly bound, hence easily burnable, hence give off less emissions? Because apparently like 90% of what comes out of your tailpipe is just unburned hydrocarbons.
Yep, that's a big one. And so that's one of the things that the hydrocarbon, it tends, like that's why we don't say we guarantee a hydrocarbon reduction, but we do see a regulation. So what does that mean? Well, that means it either kind of goes up or down, but it stabilizes. And sometimes, and this is why we have our technicians looking at it, because our actual mechanics will tell us, well, the hydrocarbons going up isn't necessarily a bad thing because of depending on the throughput of the engine and what the rest of the numbers look like. And so, you know, sometimes, it really just depends on a lot of factors on the internal combustion engine. And that's one of the things that I ran into doing research on this, because this is one of the things that I would just like to state again for the record, is that our version of this technology isn't based on anyone else's. There's other versions of this stuff. There's people that will copy it. There's a way you can kind of sort of copy some of these things that may work okay for a little bit sometimes. But our version is homegrown. It's proprietary. It's what we made. And, so we have a lot of control on how it's working, and so we know, and we have a good idea of why. And so this is where I found researching the internal combustion engine, where it's so archaic, you can see the obsolescence of it, and there is a theoretical threshold. And this is why some of these conventional hardware and additive manufacturers are interested in talking with us, like the atomizers, like because there's new atomizers that work awesome. Like you mentioned, they're kind of like, it's sort of like integrating the carburetor thing into the fuel injector aspect to do exactly what you talked about, which we're theorizing is sort of a form of what we're doing too. But there's a threshold because of the actual physical components of the engines that we're using, the four-stroke engines. I mean, because theoretically, the diesel engine is better, so is a rotary engine. These things are better, they're more efficient designs, but we don't use them. Why? Well, because probably because the tooling would just be too much to change in all the factories, I'm guessing, honestly. But we need to change that. We need to really kind of move away from these things eventually, because there's better ways to do it. And so when we're doing these codes, I'm looking at things going like, well, it's not just about working with the fuel. We have to look at the car. Like, I want this catalytic converter to get hot faster. So that's another test that we still have to do. We have to see if some of the code we put in for that is working right. But it seems to work better when the catalytic converter is there. We've had those kind of tests when someone's had a bad cat, and we've seen the technology still knock it down, but it does knock it down better with the catalytic converter, which would theoretically be the case if this code was working right. And it seems to be. So, but once again, we're dealing with characteristics of the car, not the fuel. You know, so like, I mean, I'm even thinking about entering in drag coefficients like you see in B2 bombers. Let's see if we can change the drag coefficient in front of the car. So that way you get the fuel burns, you don't have to use as much fuel because you're not getting as much resistance by the air. So it's just kind of weird things like that that has to go into it. And once again, it seems ultimately what we're talking about here is specific information that somehow we're transferring and is cohering matter in the way we want it to. So it's kind of spooky even to me, honestly, Vinny. That's kind of why I completely understand the skepticism, and I don't get offended, because I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't believe this either if I didn't see it work so many times, you know?
Well, it's, again, I think this is can be interpreted as evidence that matter is conscious and actually responds to our consciousness as well, to a degree.
Yeah, I think that, yes, absolutely. The awareness, consciousness, information, how they all play together, and one can't be there without the other. And, I agree with you, because that was one of the things that I've brought up, a different perspective on this technology, when we've had meetings or even when I'm talking to colleagues like Jeff Harvey, for instance. And what I'm saying, like, you know, I'm not so much sure that we're affecting matter. Like, I'm not so sure we're, like, kind of proverbially pushing over dominoes here.
Or maybe you're tamping into something that's already there that's being communicated to you kind of psychically, sort of thing.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. I think that actually what we're doing is we're communicating with things. Like, we're not pushing things. We're telling it, hey, domino, it's really cool when you fall over. Oh, really? Why? Because this happens and everyone loves it. Oh, I'm going to jump over that. And it seems like more of that kind of case than it is like, you know, we proverbially, you know, send an air puff at the domino, which is kind of weird, right? It seems like that would be the easiest explanation. It's some kind of force, a wave force, but there's no calculable force. It seems to be very much information. Somehow information is being transferred, which the only models that seem to explain it has to do with the scalar fields and such in modern academics. But this is why we have our pedigrees, like I said, looking for alumni in modern academics to see where they've gotten and what they'd be willing to share on the current physics model of even electron clouds. What do they think of that these days? Because we're looking to communicate, because that's what we're realizing that we're doing in a sense. We're communicating with different types of matter, different types of life in that sense. And I've noticed that since we've taken more of that approach, things seem to be more effective. So, yeah.
It's kind of like the difference between forcing somebody to do something and asking them very nicely and providing them rewards for it, you know? Yeah. In essence, you're kind of turning matter into a debt slave to a degree.
Well, it obviously chose to participate in the reality that we're experiencing.
Oh, yeah, but only if it's aware of the choice on a subconscious level, you know, like in the Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're serving as, just to, you know, inform these little atoms that, hey, you have a choice here, too. I guess that could be the case. And ultimately, I think that, you know, is why we approach things that as we do is, you know, we're not looking to impose necessarily like will. That's kind of why we're looking at more as communication, asking what we're working with if they want to do it, not just like, we're going to push this wave at you and make it happen. It's like, no, it's not how it works. It's not as effective either. You know, like if you drag, even in conventional medicine, it's like it's shown like how someone has a positive attitude about it, they're probably going to do better than the one that got drugged and kicking and screaming, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like, I think this is actually probably half of the reason why reductionism even exists, because people don't want to take responsibility that their thoughts actually cause physical things.
Yeah, I think that it's a lot of people assign blame to the chain of causality, and they're not necessarily the same thing. And one doesn't hinge on the other, and causes are infinite in an infinite multiverse. So there's always different chains of causality to observe.
Yeah.
Which is, I know that kind of probably sound kind of convoluted to some people, but it's like, rewind it and you'll see what I mean. So.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like people don't appreciate reality to a degree. Like, it's almost like they've lost respect for it, you know? As a result, they've tried to put all these rules and everything. It's what happens in every single tyranny, right? You know, it just, you gain control of something, and then you start to impose your rules on it, regardless of whether or not how that substance wants to act, sort of thing. That's what science has been basically corrupted into doing, I believe.
Yeah, it's turned into its own kind of religion, and that's what some things like a doctor that I really respect, Dr. Bruce Lipton, talks about, because he is a reductionist materialist. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with his work, and how he ultimately, proved himself wrong in his own microbiology. He's like, wait a minute, there is something to this whole, like, we control our DNA thing, and proved it. So it happens, because we're looking at things as being subject to chaos and chance, when there's really no such thing, and there's a logic to that flow. You know, it only appears chaotic because there's some order of which it's compared to, which in itself gives it form. It's a form. It's identified as chaos.
Which actually sounds very similar to how the aliens' battle formations worked in Ender's Game. That's appeared chaotic, exactly. But they were under control.
Exactly. It looks chaotic. It looked very strange. It looked almost organic, but there was coherence. You know what I mean, like how I'm sure in that movie, a lot of listeners who notice how some of the way the drones would reach out looked awful lot like, tree branches or tree roots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, which is a fractal expression of how these cells are dividing and multiplying.
Mm.
So fun, this reality. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people do take this reality way too much for granted. And I think that, a lot of it is attributed to the social programming, be it religion or just, popular opinion, that has told everyone that we live in a boring world that's all composed of marbles, and that if we're lucky, there's some judgmental dude in the clouds who's going to tell you if you go have fun or not when you leave here, if you believe in that. It's like, there's way more to this than that,
I've always found it ironic how some people are very, very sure about their perception of God, have strong beliefs that they're unwilling to have challenged and whatnot, and they actually hate and try to destroy the lives of people who question those kind of things, because it's how they derive power for themselves is through their strong belief. And if you manage to prove their beliefs are actually based upon fallacy, it's almost like they feel powerless all of a sudden, and they hate you for taking away their power.
Yeah, absolutely. And their foundation of what they think is right and wrong. You know, I've had these conversations with people so many times, like when I've told them I'm not into religion. Oh, so you must be like really bad person and same worshiper and this and this. Like, no, I just don't follow organized religion. Because why? Because I don't need it. I don't need a rule that's written on a paper to tell me not to steal from people or try to kill people for no reason. You know what I mean? I just don't need a rule to tell me that. And I'd ask people, I'm like, if you need a rule for that to happen, like, yeah, that's just you. that's just, then you, a lot of people might think you're a bad person. Sorry, accept it. But if you need that rule, like, then that's just not what religion is supposed to be there for. This is not what spirituality is. What understanding the interconnectivity of everything, I guess you can say, instead of spirituality, for those who don't like dogmas either, because of the sort of connotation and association that spirit has been given now, because of all these sort of hardcore believers and fanatics. And it's like, I know I offend a lot of people when I talk about religion, and it's like, I'm not really sorry, because to me, I kind of see that people who are stuck in religion as being stuck in an elementary school grade and they haven't passed the test yet. It's like, come on, guys, it's just simple spelling and arithmetic. Do it. You know, you're part of this infinite thing. It tells you in all these books, they tell you the same thing. And then the rest of us are saying the same thing. But like how you're saying, it's they have created this foundation of lies from other lies to keep people in control. And that's all it is. And that's, I mean, I've had these conversations with friends and family and people I don't know. And I had to say, I'm sorry, I can show you history and it will prove this right. So it's like, it's not belief. It's just observation. Yeah.
Well, imagine how difficult it is to control the consciousness of somebody who believes in infinite consciousness, to control the possibilities of somebody who believes in infinite possibilities.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's a concept that obviously was left out of these religions. Like, they didn't want you people to know that they're part of the infinite directly, and that, yes, we can synchronize with fantastic realities. I mean, in a sense, it does feel powerful. Like we talked about, I created this, or that hurricane was there because of this, and I made that gold bar appear, whatever it is, doesn't matter. It's more of a synchronization with the reality. It's not that was necessarily created by just the thought. It's like the pathway of thought created the same sine wave, you know, linked up with the reality where that was the highest probability. So in a lot of ways, this is one of the things that I would tell people at one point who say we're really into even just Christianity. I'd be like, well, if you're so into Jesus, like, how come you didn't, like, look more into the story? Like, wouldn't you want to find out more about this character than just what this book said? Like, wouldn't you want to see what else, or if anyone else saw this person around the world? You know, so I'm going to, and even if I don't usually start from a denigrating point of view, I just let people know where I stand in posterity. But, like, when I'm talking to someone, I try to be, you know, as much as compassionate as they are about it. So if you can see that they have a sincere interest or some kind of, or at least sincerely allowing the possibility of what I'm saying to be there, I'll tell them, like, just check out more of the Jesus story than you knew. Like, because it is an anomaly. I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe in anything here. That's what I think a lot of people think. It's just there is some kind of anomaly relating to this archetype or this person, whatever the hell it was, Jesus, as well as some of these other figures for one reason or another. And it's an intriguing story, and it does link to fantastic stuff. Why not? Keep going. Follow it. You're going to find, like what everyone else finds, including, you know, scientists. At one point, you run into ETs and ghosts, you know, in science or spirituality. It just ends up there, you know?
Well, I think that it's quite strange the level in which people have been taught to deny what's measurable, to actually protect themselves from evidence, whilst at the same time claiming that there is no such evidence, and if there is, they're the one that has it, when they don't. You know, it can't be anything other than mind control, in my professional opinion. You know, and that's what education has become. It's become basically a graduate course in state mind control.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Earlier, when you were talking about those who, you know, do significant things to the world, you can say, usually don't follow that formula, and it makes ask why. It's not necessarily that there's no value inherently in the education system. I think people aren't looking at the education system like a puzzle itself. So yes, there is information in there that they're trying to teach you, and you think it's about the grades, but it's not. It's not about the grades. It's about recognizing what the system is doing, like you're talking about, and how you can how you factor in and how you can fit yourself in. I mean, I learned that even in high school, knowing how to sort of buck the system, because I knew what I actually needed to graduate versus what they told everyone you had to take, which wasn't the truth. So I was able to have like in a sense, I barely graduated high school because I didn't have a whole bunch of extra units I didn't need, because I just went home. I'm like, why would I want to sit here for? I'm going to go to college for this stuff. So I'm going to take what I need to get there, and that's it. You know? So everyone would just trip out. Like, how are you doing this? I'm like, well, because I know I can do it, and I can. It says on the California law, you know, like what you need and what you don't. So if they disagree with me, I say this is what it says. Sorry. You know? So yeah, knowing that, it's like a Rubik's Cube. Figure out the Rubik's Cube and you got it. You don't have to keep going back to school, you know? And so that's one of the things that I'm sure, you know, especially those who come from like a shamanistic or spiritual path in different ways, when they talk about things like the control mechanisms that are put in place right now by some secret societies and such, it's like, yeah, they're dastardly. A lot of, they're some of the worst people around, which you can imagine. But some of them also are playing that role because they're saying, like, you have to be smart enough to see this if you really want to get out in space, for instance, or if you really want to jump into the multiverse. It's like, if you can't figure out this little riddle right here, you're not going to be able to figure it out over there. And you're not, it's like, it's worse than just not eating for a day or two. It's, you're just squashed and dead. You know, like how you're talking about the Andy story. It's like, your ankles are gone now. Sorry. You know what I mean? So it's a little, the stakes are higher. So I can understand to a degree why some of the path of resistance has been put in front of us so harshly. You know, and that's something I had to learn to sort of forgive too. And I kind of come up with the analogy of like, and ultimately all the things that the proverbial they have done to us really has only made us stronger. None of us are dropping over from radiation poisoning. We haven't died of fluoride, all the pesticides, or all this other stuff. The GMOs, people are still munching it and growing bigger. You know what I mean? So it's not diminishing us, actually. And we're living longer. Even with the bad medicine, we're still living longer, getting bigger, stronger. So it's like, it's kind of like they're the proverbial weight that we're exercising with. So don't get too mad at that barbell. Just put it up and keep doing it. And you're going to get stronger and you're going to evolve. And it's not going to matter, pretty much.
Well, it's also a measure of what do you want to do with your life? You know, are you wanting to do something that's meaningful, that inspires change, or do you just want to do what somebody else is telling you to do so that you can survive? Mm-hmm. You know, you do actually have to make a choice. Both roads are actually really hard. One road, when you're working for somebody else, you wind up hating that person who employs you so much that that hate spills over and you start hating yourself for actually still being employed to that motherfucker. And then the other part of it is you hate the people who are suppressing creativity and everything that's good in humanity out there, and you're trying to actually create a device or a business or something like that to serve a particular function, to help the human race, or to help evolution, or help something grand that is bigger than yourself, and you feel really good about it. But you hate the fact that you have to work so hard and that there are so many scumbags who are trying to challenge you, not by genuinely challenging you, but by denying that what you're doing has any validity, even if you can prove it.
Yeah, so true. So very true. And I think that's one of the problems we hadn't even mentioned, obviously, with you know, the modern academics, science in general. It's you know, rule by decree, not by you know, experiment or data. And so you have these people are just more interested in their tenure than actually doing science, and it's a shame, really. Because there's, I mean, I know some ways I can seem kind of disrespectful to some of these people in these different places, but really it's more like I'm just disappointed. It's like why would you go through that trouble and then stop caring about your discipline, right? That's why I never understood about some of these scientists who people are looking at as renowned scientists in the world. And like, what experiment have they done lately? What have they done?
May I postulate a theory?
Yeah.
When somebody really, really wants a job and they go on the unemployment benefit because they can't find one, eventually they get so sick and tired of looking for work that they no longer want a job anymore and continue drawing that government benefit. So does a scientist with tenure get used to being on the benefit of being unremovable, constantly paid, and having lackeys to do all your work and thinking for you so that you don't have to do anything? You get so comfortable with the lack of challenge in your life that you become a slave to it.
Yeah, definitely. And once again, the social programming aspect comes in. And this is why, this is something that actually is very close to all of our hearts here at our company. Is that we would like to offer a sort of psychic relief in the sense of like just a break in that programming for a second, so people can be like, you know what, maybe I can create something cool, or you know what, I am proficient enough to that skill to go ahead and do that. because I find that so much of this programming is hinged on the systematic self-deprecation that has been built into everyone's mind to feel that they're not good enough, or there's guilt, shame, and blame on top of things on all of this. And these projected ideals, these projected unattainable ideals that they tell everyone is a norm, but no one has. So it's like the proverbial carrot in front of the horse or donkey there that no one's ever going to get. And so once again, solve that Rubik's Cube puzzle, and then you got the carrot. You know, it's right there. It's always been there.
I'm really sick of there's a way of argument that officialdom brings up, which is that my argument to your argument, which just proved my argument wrong, is to shift the goalposts again and again and again and again and again and again and again.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, there's definitely, you can definitely try to shift the goalposts like that, but ultimately, as we're seeing now, that too much information and awareness is happening to our people are learning how to make their own energy, how to grow their own food out of very small confined areas. So at one point, it's kind of like it gets too blatant in terms of any oppressive force. And I think that, and this is what I kind of jokingly refer to these things as, some of these conversations as doomsday checkers, when you kind of say, okay, well, they're going to do this, and they're going to constantly do this, this, and that. And I'm like, well, there's a counter for all of these, and this is why we see so many more whistleblowers, and they're coming out more and more inventions like what we're doing and other people are doing. They're having profound effects because, in a sense, they're simple. Just like it's simple to play, you know, a favorite song for a lot of people. Some of the best songs everyone remembers are very simple songs to play, but once you have to know how to play them. And once you do, you can play it all the time. And so it's very similar with a lot of these techniques with free energy, healing, and all these other types of formulas. They're just formulas. And once you know the formula, you can keep doing it. And you can't keep that idea. It's like that's why the patent thing is falling apart. Because it's just not going to work. You can't just say you own everything. Because it just doesn't work that way. And so, like, you know, we're doing what we're doing. I know other people are doing stuff too. They have garages all over the world. So they can't hold it back much longer. And that's just kind of how it goes. I'd say my theory is that pretty soon, all of a sudden, you know, Ford's going to have the, you know, clean electric infusion or an hydrogen car. Here it is. Boom. You know, oh, here's electric company with the ultra efficient solar panels all of a sudden.
Yeah. And here's the New World Order global government financed by your carbon taxes to pay for it all. Aren't we nice?
Yeah, in a sense, because ultimately this is one of the things that, That's the other part of the Rubik's Cube, because fund, it's like the people at the top, they don't think in money. Like, they make money. Like, they can just say all of a sudden, bam, okay, that's happening. There's $60 trillion wherever we need it. Doesn't matter. We make it. So it goes beyond that. It gets into the esoteric stuff, the secret societies, and all this other stuff, because they've had this knowledge. And then the technology that we're talking about, okay, what we're seeing there, I'm sure some of your audience has picked up on this too. It's on the verge of materialization or actual alchemy. So at one point, you hear these stories too about just making gold or just making anything. So it's kind of, that's what we are on the threshold of in terms of society, not just our company. We're talking like in garages. Soon enough, there's going to be certain, you know, people will have the knowledge and the ability, if they really apply themselves, to do this. So it's kind of, they see this. They see this control mechanism going away. So that's why, how even in the old Illuminati plan with the whole Project Bluebeam being the escalation after the asteroid thing, like we're seeing now, is like, because that's the inevitable evolution. You have to try to just push the threat out further to have a bigger scale of gap between the populace's technology awareness and what's out even further. And that's the only place that you can do is literally go outside space or inwards in the inner space. And so that's going to be that buffer for a little bit. And I think, this is just my own theory. That's why I think we're seeing what we're seeing now in Russia and the Ukraine, because they're kind of, in a sense, reverting back to the Cold War, because that justifies their industrial buildup without actually having to fight a phantom enemy, without actually having to get into Project Bluebeam or announce that there's anything like that around. you can perpetuate the lie for even longer. You can stall the timeline. That's just my guess. But I think that's what's going on, because like you can't, I'm pretty good at what I do, and so is my crew, but you know, it's not like we're the only ones who can do this, and they can't kill everybody, and they're not killing everybody. So that means this is coming out, and this is going to be here soon. So,
well, actually, I'll disagree. They can kill everybody, but they're just not. Why that is, who knows? I say this because I've actually interviewed a former member of CIA assassination teams who got 17 kills out of 17 over his assassination career, where they could just go to an ATM and take out $250,000, pay for all their vehicles, their weapons, their surveillance equipment and everything on the site, and set up triangular shoot points and everything like that, assassinate people in public squares, and hold back the police, bribe a few officials and things like that, so that they have a few extra minutes before the police turn up to the crime scene, and then they're away, won't be caught, and then they bribe up a whole bunch of other officials and what have you, just appoint a commission to investigate the assassination that will only look at the investigation of the assassination, not who actually did the assassination, and cover it up perpetually. This is the thing.
I'm just going to say, just from my knowledge, that there's a reason why whoever that hitman was, he only did 17. Okay, I'm sure that's fine. That's
here's the reason why.
That's what I'm saying. 17 of them isn't, you know, 8 billion. Okay, and
oh yeah, but there ain't 8 billion people doing your work, though.
We're saying everybody. And so, yes, there's doomsday devices that can vaporize the planet, but like I was saying earlier, if you talk to enough of these contacts with enough clearance to go above, like that guy's, like, guaranteed, basically, they'll tell you there's always something weird that keeps the doomsday device from clicking on. And usually it's some ETs and ghosts. It's what it comes down to, once again. So if you ever, whatever angle you go, you run into weirdness. And so that's really why we haven't been vaporized, because, yeah, they have the megaviruses. They have the hydrogen bomb will vaporize us back in the day. It doesn't matter. But it doesn't go on for a reason. It's not just because necessarily the universe is kumbaya. I think it's because ultimately there is shared resources here that aren't just ours. And so people aren't going to let us blow up this planet because we don't necessarily own it. So they're like, no.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what Kennedy said to his military advisors, who said as soon as the missiles crossed that little parallel there going into Cuba, that they should launch a preeminent strike against a preemptive strike against Russia. And he said no. And that one man averted nuclear disaster for the whole world. And they killed him for it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably been others, you know what I mean, since then that we've never heard about. That happens all the time, too. It's tragic. It sucks. Our best and brightest get blinked out, and no one ever knows. And it's a tragedy. It is. And I think that's why the stuff like what we're talking about, the technology that myself and other people are doing, the more it comes out, the more we have a chance to actually honor some of those people who really did save us. Because it happened.
Have you ever noticed that there's a hell of a lot more power in self-sacrifice than in sacrificing somebody else?
Oh yeah, there seems to be a, you know, I think that is obviously known by the secret societies, and I think that's why you've seen in history where they would try to tell the people it's good to throw yourself in the volcano. You're so honored. Go throw yourself in the volcano. Yeah, you know, I think that's why they did that, because yes, it seems to be some kind of information charge. I don't even know what you would call it. This
point, it's the power of will, like the Force.
In a sense, but yeah, what is that? What is that? You know, because there is quantifiable things that we're looking at here that show that, you know, even implosive forces relating to why 27 grams, whatever, goes away from a body when it dies. And, you know, these kind of oddities, because there's some kind of relative density fluctuation. So that correlates with some kind of amplitude, if you want to translate to that language. So it's just intriguing to me. I love it. That's why I love physics. I love hearing it's not as enigmatic as we maybe once thought. We're very, very close to understanding all these things that we once called psychic or paranormal or weird. It's like, no, it's not weird. It's just reality, and here's how to do it. You know, it's really cool.
Yeah, this is here's how to do it. This is how it works, etc., etc. But that's witchcraft. That's alchemy, Narbo. It's science. Okay, kind of like that old quote: "Is that sufficiently advanced a race wielding sufficiently advanced technology would appear as magic to any primitive race that they encountered."
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, and this is another thing. I, in fact, this reminds me of an argument that I had with one of my friends when we were like 15 or something. We collected these models, and I collected the sci-fi ones. He collected the kind of fantasy ones, you know. And I had an argument that you could do anything with advanced technology that you could do with magic.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like in a sense, it's just different methods. You know, that's because ultimately that's what we're saying, right? It's like magic is a method, science is a method. But what makes it magic? What makes it science? It's just semantics, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, more or less. Maybe science is magic.
I think so. I really do. I think that even if when we know how we're replicating this compound, it's still like amazing on the quantum level of what causes those bonds. Because once again, I was saying like everything with all the space between it should pass through itself. It just seems to magically find an approximation point where it seems like we're touching something, but it's more like a magnetic repulsion effect that's happening. I mean, so, dude, what's that? I mean, that's freaking amazing to me. So I think so. I think they're one and the same. You know? And I think that the magic term is maybe what they just called it, you know, in history, you know, the method that we're using right now, because to me it sounds very similar. You know, you have an idea. You test the idea, and then you know if the idea is real or not, so or it works or not. You know?
Yeah, and how can people dream about and come up with technologies in exactly the same way? I mean, the example I like to use all the time is the invention of the telescope. I think like 9 people on different sides of the Earth all came up with it on the same night.
Yeah, isn't that trippy?
Yeah. You know, so, yeah. Now, I'm just thinking that what my idea of God is, I think I've explained this on the radio before, but it bears repeating, is God's like a macro organism. Okay, so just like there's 5 trillion cells that make up my body, there's X amount of trillions of organisms that make up the Earth, which is one cell of a much larger organism, and so on and so forth. But for the moment, the God complex, the consciousness, and the macro is the Earth for us. Like that's a representation of like something physical that you can see and interpret as a higher form of life form than all of us microscopic by comparison organisms around here, and we all fulfill different functions and things of that nature within this organism, just like every cell in our body does. Now every single cell has consciousness, however, and so that means that any larger organism that is made up of many smaller ones have all of these little influences on its consciousness, kind of like small cells whispering slowly all together or chanting or what have you, can actually produce different effects, much like people would be sitting around in a drumming circle around a fire on a full moon or something like that, and there's all these different effects that happen in parts that light up the brain, etc. So what the will of God is I believe the latent psionic energy of every living conscious being within this macroorganism called the Earth, all having their own little influences and what have you, kind of like shooting billiard balls into the realms of possibilities and having all these sorts of strange and amazing and allegedly unexplainable and seemingly random reactions. And that's what the will of God is to me, the random sequence of synchronicity that is only brought into existence by the collective consciousness of all living beings.
Yeah, I can see that interpretation. And I think that that interconnectivity is what we're really being to understand with some kind of logic. You know, those proverbial billiard balls aren't just going around chaotically anymore. Now we're seeing where the bank shot came from a little bit more on certain instances, because another observation our colleague made to Matt about synchronicity, that once again, statistically it seems to be very similar to those entanglement principles and experiments that have been done in different institutions. So we're seeing these repeating patterns, and repeating patterns are what? An algorithm plotted as a waveform, a sine wave. And so, you know, we're talking, everyone's kind of somewhat speaking the similar language here, and we all kind of interconnect in these different, these sort of waveforms.
Mm. Hey, yeah. In what kind of way does Al Gore dance? With an algorithm.
Algorithm. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, lame joke aside, it's time for a break, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Jerry Avalos, you know, kind of like Avalon, but, you know, is lost in the mist. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. But just remember, of course, again, reiterate, listener-supported broadcast, it only gets achieved because of your financial support, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you so much for doing so over all these years. Long may it continue to expose scumbaggery by giving some decent people a voice out there with profound thoughts so that you can enrich your minds and indeed even share the information with others to enrich theirs. We'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Think you could tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to train your heroes for ghosts, hot ashes for trees, hot air for a cool breeze, cold comfort for change? Did you exchange a walk-on part in the war for a lead role?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 3 of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the listener-supported broadcast that brings you the voices from all over the world across various fields of research. I was contemplating over the break about what function this show puts in the truth movement. Well, there are a number of different types of shows you can listen to online. Let's say all the way from the Alex Joneses and that kind of thing, as well as out to the esoteric, like perhaps Red Ice Radio and George Norrie. And what this show's kind of function is, it's sort of like in between that spectrum, where you've gotten over the fact that, yes, there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery that are controlling the earth and blah, 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 and it's very scary and it's very depressing and your friends hate you and your family think you're crazy and all of that kind of thing. And then there's the other aspect, which is getting into the serious research and actually learning and accumulating knowledge so that you can live your life free of the socialized constraints on your thinking, the mind control of television, and so on and so forth. This show really embodies the spirit of those other broadcasts, but with the added essence of simply coping with this information that you're receiving through the advent of telling a few jokes and being a little bit silly. Because, look, just because there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbags that control everything and make most of the world's decisions without you having any part in it, and because they're enslaving you and because they plan to exterminate you, just because that's a fact doesn't mean you have to be upset about it, doesn't mean you have to be miserable and curl up into a fetal position and be resigned to failure, all right? Have a good sense of humor about it. Look, it's a hell of a lot more difficult to get somebody depressed if they're laughing all the time. Because you know what depression does to you? Shuts you down. Stops you from doing things. All right? So when people say, oh, let's meet up with a whole bunch of other conspiracy theorists and have some fun or whatever, like at a party or whatnot, that person goes, well, what if the surveillance societies, you know, are like linked into this? Bro, that's what they want you to say. They want you to not collaborate with each other. They want you to be isolated. They want you to isolate yourself so that they don't have to do it by force. Don't you get it? You bring people together, you have a good time with them, and you get to see who they really are on this broadcast. That's the point, and I think it's very important. If you support that, I implore you, please, start up a regular monthly donation. It can be $1 a month if you want. One of my listeners donates $100 a month because he believes in the strength of this broadcast and the good it does for humanity so much. He's willing to support me. I'm very, very intensely grateful for everybody who does, because if you support me, you support nearly everybody in this entire movement across the entire spectrum by proxy. That is how far your dollar goes, just when I'm paying my rent. And I make sure that that happens, because I feel guilty if somebody's giving me something and I ain't giving them way back more than they've been giving me. All right? That's my goal. I hope I succeed. My very special guest is Jerry Avalos. His websites again, theholotree.com, HOLOTree.com, theholotree.com, and intrinsicenergyinnovations.com. Now, we're going to be going into a bit of an intense part of the broadcast here. So for those of you who have listened to the Thunder and Light Team broadcast that I did, you know, it was really wowing. They had all this great holographic technology, very similar to the kind of stuff Jerry has been talking about here earlier on in the broadcast. But they've got a bit of a history, and Jerry, I'd like it if you'd, tell us the story from your perspective, because we've heard Brad's story about how some people have been attacking him and what have you, and I've seen the video of you yelling at him at a convention and what have you. So I've heard his side of the story. I'd like to hear yours.
Yeah, no problem. The video fiasco, and I guess I can just prompt that right away, because I think those listeners now who may have seen that or will see that, some might be turned off by it, and it's unfortunate, but I can understand that that might happen, because there is you could say it was very personal between he and I, but then you'll also see in posterity through my other recordings that's not characteristic of me. You kind of hear me talking like I am now, just having fun, really pretty much, you know, laid back most of the time. So it kind of makes you wonder what would get me so upset. Well, I'm glad everyone asked. So basically, what I noticed of this individual is, you know, being in Southern California, you meet all kinds here. And I still work on somewhat of a contractual basis with another type of truth media movement, Project Camelot. And at the time that I was, you know, we were mutually sharing information about things that were of interest. And so I noticed this person, you know, Thunder, coming on the scene with these holograms and talking, you know, some pretty profound stuff. And so he gave me his blah, blah about how it supposedly worked. And I'm like, fine, your theory is as good as anyone's. I'll take this hologram and I will forget it for a bit. And that's pretty much what happened until I decided to go ahead and check it out a little bit and see if there was any videos or anything about it. And I did find some videos that demonstrated the sort of test that he would do. And it would show that the repeats, they're repeating, you know, these demonstrations. So, like, something on it's working. So then I ran into him again. And so we had another chat. And we got a little further down the rabbit hole. But I knew there was just something not right about this guy. Because, you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting some very, you know, skilled people at what they do. And this guy just did not extrude any of that to me. And I've met savants, you know what I mean, that just don't really have to have that much discipline, but they do profound things. And once again, this guy just did not strike me as that. Something else was up with that. So in a sense, I kind of attached myself to him and just gave him a lip service. It's like, oh, yeah, it was a great idea. Oh, really? You made that? Oh, good job. Kind of like how, you know, in a sense, like an accentuated version of your philosophy here, Vinny. I just kind of did more of it. And until at one point, I realized, yeah, he was lying. Because he would say stuff like, he invented this machine. And then once I saw the machine he was using, and I asked him certain questions, I didn't necessarily know what machine it was at first, but I know stuff about fabrication, like I mentioned in the beginning. And I know certain tooling has to be done to do certain stuff. And so I'd ask him this. I would say, so you invented this machine? Yes. But okay. So you made this custom housing? Yes. Who did the die work on this? Huh? This is an injection molded piece of plastic. You can't just do this with some, you know, candle wax mold or something. This has to go through a machine that does this. It's very expensive. Who did this? And he's like, oh, blah, 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 just kind of trailed off into something else. And I'm like, yep, liar. Do it. And, and then especially because the markings were also taped over. It wasn't like structural tape. You know what I mean? It was like, it was just markings that were marked over. Didn't fit his story about what those markings are kind of doing. And then consulting with my colleague, Jeff Harvey, who I've been working with for a while, telling him what I've seen of this machine and what it does and the software, he's like, that sounds awful lot like an SC5, an older version of the SC5-1000 that's currently available. It's gray and has, you know, this 7-pointed star and little replicator plate coils and all that stuff. And sure as anything, that's what it was. And we come to find out that, you know, yeah, he was nowhere near the inventor of this machine. That is the machine he was using. I know for a fact because he did live with me for a little bit when he lost where he was at before. And I seen him in code, and I seen the merchandise that he put out. I helped even acquire some of the holograms that he ordered. So I know what machine he was using. So that's why if those who've seen the video, like yourself, Penny, when he was just like, you've never seen my machine, bro. It's like, I mean, he's lying, dude. I mean, that's what a lot of people here knew because they've seen him here too. And they've seen the machine. He's brought the machine to different places. We've seen what he sold. So he is lying. And I've seen it. And it's an SC5. And he's on record now. For those who want to go into history and look up some of his old interviews, he will say he invented that machine before he would have acquired these other things that he's saying now. That's the same product. So there's a lot of incongruency. I'm saying go and check it out. It's out there. I don't even have to do anything for you. Don't believe me. Just go Google it. and you'll see his name on that Smogbuster thing, which has a fraud report on it. Because they make a lot of claims that they just can't back up. You know, there's a viability to the technology, but you can't go saying you can power your house with your cell phone when it's just not physically possible because of even impedance factors of wires and stuff like that. It's very important. So that's ultimately, you know, one of the big things. Obviously, he was lying about himself and misrepresenting the technology. But then after we parted ways, we would get emails from people, and they would find us because they didn't get their product delivered, for instance, and they're wondering, like, hey, do you know these guys? Like, I'm not, you know, they don't come to me looking for us to, you know, send them free stuff, but they were just, they'd want someone to talk to in the industry, and we were there. And so I'm like, wow, that's horrible. And we'd help out a lot, and we'd hear stories about where he had advised people to get off their medication, off their doctor prescribed medication, and they would have very severe reactions and end up in the hospital almost dying. I mean, so that's another part of why I was so upset in that video, because he's almost killed people by it with his flamboyance and his just rash claims. And it's obviously irresponsible. It's criminally negligent. And that's the thing. He has a long line of people he's done wrong. And some of these people don't like that. And I've had an anonymous thing sent to me, including his entire criminal record, which is extensive. It's like, I knew he had some history, but he's been in jail a lot, or he's been arrested a lot. And a lot of it is receiving stolen goods and all this other stuff like that. And it's like, it made sense. Because it's like, he's just misrepresents himself, and he straight up lies. And it's pretty bad. You know, it's like, it's the exact kind of person that none of us want to do business with, and none of us really want around. And like I said, I think that, I eventually apologized to everyone around me and my colleagues, because like, it was like a dangerous play in a sense, kind of attaching like that. But because I seen what was happening, knowing the implications of the technology, knowing what's going on, and knowing that we can do something about it, we have to stand by what we believe, right? And that's why, like, right now, I have no problem, like, just saying that, yeah, he's a liar. I want to do business with him, and I think he should be in jail. And there's people trying to put him there, you know, for what he's done. Not necessarily to me, because I kept him in check, you know, honestly. You know, I'm not just saying that to boast, but yeah, it's like, in a sense, I know he's afraid of me, because he tries to bully people, and that doesn't work with me. So, you know, it's just, he's just, that's how he is. And there's a lot of allegations about even where he got that machine, that's why he can't order from the original manufacturers, because he's been blackballed. Any one of his names, anyone who works with him, you cannot order anything from the manufacturer or any of the authorized dealers, you know, basically, because he's been, because of this, because he's gotten wind, or the manufacturer's gotten wind, that the machine he's using right now is possibly stolen from another person, and they reported this. And so once again, they're receiving stolen goods. It's like, kind of fits the bill. Especially when it's all taped up, so you don't know, try to hide what it is. And it's pretty despicable, really, you know. And I'm just glad I was able to get the information I needed and get out before, like, I was, had anything to do with some of the money that just disappeared. And so all these horrible advice he'd be giving people. So, so that's why I don't think that, I don't think his current associates realize, like, how much in danger they are in terms of legal liabilities with what's going on there. So, yeah, that's one of the things that's why we're adamant, because, you know, we have our biofuel boost system, which, and the claim that we make, we verify that's what it does, but we're not going to say don't use what's prescribed to you. It's like, that's up to you and your doctor. You know what I mean? And if anything that we do relating to meds is going to help make them better, or at least not hurt you. You know what I mean? So our goal is not to replace anything. It's to work with, like we talked about. But yeah, that's not the case with him and his associates, because they're just looking for a quick score. Because, I mean, honestly, it's like, he's just not a good person. Well, I guess you can say that's kind of like the short version.
Well, I mean, by all means, keep going. We've still got another, like, 40 minutes left in the hour, you know, so if there's any... because when you're trying to lock somebody down and you talk about their reputation, their history, and all of that kind of thing, and you light on the details, sometimes it can leave it open to misinterpretation, speculation, and hence denial. Whereas if what you're talking about is absolutely real, then those basic questions of who, what, when, where, why, how, and those kind of things should all be kind of like filled in and shall we say lathered over to the extent possible.
Yeah, because really a lot of times when this has come up, like, a lot of hosts are worried about their liability, so they don't want to hear it. So for instance, how I said some of that money disappearing, a lot of it went to meth. You know, and I'm no meth user, that's for sure. I like things that grow out of the ground. I don't like weird chemicals. And I've seen him purchase and partake many times. Absolutely, that's what it is. So if you're wondering why he's all jittery and not looking so healthy himself, it's probably the methamphetamine. just a guess. So, and if someone wants to take a blood sample on that, I'm sure they're going to find it. And so I know this is true. It's one of the things I observed. You know, and I'm trying to think of something else that's just like really obnoxious. See, now this is just off that line right there, though, how we just got done talking about this technology and how entanglement's a factor. So this is something that we've seen in the technology. I'm sure that there's probably been some feedback, maybe even from some people from your audience who've bought some of these, is the erratic nature of how they kind of work and kind of don't. Because that gets into even the lack of manufacturing time. Because, you know, for myself, you know, when we decided to do this on our own, we consulted the manufacturer. We consulted authorized resellers. We talked to Jeff Harvey a lot. And there's an industry standard of how long these holograms, even if you're using a hologram, how long they should be treated to last roughly a year based on other people's applications. And from what I observed in his manufacturing process time, it was like 30 seconds to 20 minutes, maybe at best an hour, that this thing sat on the machine. And it needs to be there at least 24 hours. At least 24 hours. Depending on how long the code set is. And so observing that, it's like the quality of product just isn't there. And that was something that even when I was there, it's like it just didn't sit right. And this is, you know, because I did my best, honestly, to try to like scare them straight in a sense. I was like, kind of tell them, like, well, you know what the problem here is, Thunder? He's like, what's that? I'm like, you're doing business like a junkie. And while you're, not only are you doing business like a junkie, you're acting like someone who actually didn't invent anything because you get so defensive. And while you feel like you're having to prove something because you actually didn't do anything. And while it's pretty apparent to certain people. And he didn't get it. He thought I was giving him business advice. I was trying to tell him, like, dude, I got you. Check me. And it just wouldn't sink in his dumb meth mind. And it was pretty amazing, honestly, seeing like how a lot of people, like they project their perceptions of what they feel this community is, and it guides their decision to buy that product based on how this dude looks or how he talks. And it was like, you can see in a sense how we talked about social programming. Why so many are programmed, because in a sense he's using that against people is what was going on. And it's still working with some people. It's like, wow, that's amazing. You know, so, cause a lot of the things that would happen, including this test procedure, you know, there would be so many times, like all of these products, you know, while I was there, I'd tell them, like, dude, you gotta stop telling people that they're gonna save gas. It's like, you can't verify that. Only thing you can verify is that it's knocked down pollution sometimes. But it didn't matter. And so I get to hear these things about like, oh, it's gonna do this, it's gonna do that. And it's like, and I, you know, and honestly, I'd have to tell people, I'm sitting there shaking my head, no. Like, it might. And because it's just, no, it's just because it wasn't going to. And then when it became apparent that really he doesn't know what he's talking about as a scientist either. So that's the thing. Like, if anyone wants to question him on real science, he won't have the answer because he just makes it up. And likewise, this intuitive remote viewing thing, it's like, it's not there. There's nothing. It's like, he's weak in that sense. And, I don't like talking crap on that vein that often, but when someone goes around boasting publicly about being one of the top remote viewers in the world, he's not. I don't even consider myself like anything like that. Why? Because there's people who work every day doing a specific protocol called remote viewing, and they will make me and him look kind of lame on certain targets. And him more lame, but me less. But still, like, this is the part where is what you're seeing. It's like this misrepresentation of things that was constant. And it was never about appropriating funds to where they should be. So, like, once I heard about, after I left, they had this whole text thing. Because that's one of the things your audience should know. This whole I can turn it off text thing is lies. It can't be done. No one in the industry has an on and off switch. And even if he doesn't even know how to test if it actually worked or not anyways. And then the smog reports, he's had fails. I was there. I've seen the failed smog reports. Okay, we have it. Why? Because of that erratic nature and their entanglement and the fact that he didn't create that program either. That was a derivative of that smog buster thing with Treehouse Consulting, which I mentioned in that video. They got that from someone else too. And those people don't really want to talk to anyone because their version, they had some success and they had some resistance and they don't really kind of shop it around. Somehow, so these, some people got some copies of it. And yeah, you can copy the technology. Absolutely. It will work only so well though. It's kind of like, you know, it can be even more erratic than just copying or duplicating a CD or something or DVD. Or even like a Xerox copy. It's almost like blending those two. It's like you still can't edit that movie or the menus in that DVD. But you can kind of see the same sort of DVD again. As opposed to, you know, actually engineering it from the ground up. And for me, that was what I wanted to do, to know that I, you know, could stand on my own in this industry. Because that's something that, you know, say that, yeah, I understand this technology enough to duplicate something else that someone else did that was, you know, pretty freaking profound. And it wasn't Thunder. It was, I can get the name of the doctor, but it wasn't even given to me. It was Jeff Harvey is actually a great source on that to try to get to find out a little more of the origin of the first reduced emissions technologies. And it wasn't Treehouse Consulting. So this kind of going over some of the list of the points like that I made in that video, because, you know, I mean, even like, for instance, if something from the video so people can reference, because he had talked about the Trinfinity 8 machine and the QXCI. The Trinfinity 8 machine is a binaural system set with a type of transducer, kind of set with the where you kind of grab these two little rods. Now, that's one kind of application that has nothing to do with holograms. You can't encode a hologram with that. It's funny. Like, I don't think anyone encodes holograms with that. It's just a completely different type of setup. The QXCI is even worse in a sense, but, well, actually, Trinfinity actually isn't that bad in hardware. The QXCI is an overpriced astrology box. A lot of people in the industry who've been using scalar amplifiers and such actually kind of refer to it more as a quack box. Because what it is, it has an intricate astrology program, and then it uses a random event generator to generate a probability of ailments within those parameters it's given. So it's really kind of like an arbitrary calculator. It doesn't actually do subtle energy in that sense. Unlike the SE5, for instance, the SE5-1000, there actually is, you know, the circuit board, how it's created, creates that scalar effect, where you have an longitudinal interference pattern that's going on, and then the difference, how I mentioned in the video too, between the SE5 and the SE5-1000 is that there is a scalar wave amplifier in the SE5-1000, and there was a catalog update in 2009, and that's what Thunder was trying to talk about with the SE5-1000, but the SE5, the commercial version, came out about 2002, 2003, and that's the commercial version of the SE5, but it actually, even in the literature itself, talks about the origin of this machine coming out of Stanford, actually, a professor who was looking into it for mineral scanning. To do geological surveys without actually having to go take soil samples and things like that. And apparently they had enough success to have it turn into what it is now. And what I've seen now is really profound. I mean, it's like this little box, you know, bends time and space, or helps us bend time and space with some stability. Because as we were talking about, our bodies can do it. You know, we have that potential. We do it all the time. This guy helps stabilize it in a sense. But see, now I know this, but if you ask him that, he won't know this kind of stuff. Because it is just about money, and it is just about him. Like, because I've heard one of the our last business arrangement together, we literally got chased out of, you know, our home here by encroaching entities, I guess you can say, some very weird high technology remote influencing technology was very apparently being targeted over here. And so we sort of took refuge at a potential investor's.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So we were talking earlier about sort of remote influencing by way of a psychic, you know, someone who might be able to tap into someone and kind of, you know, influence them. And in a sense, movie-wise, if people want some references to this, there's a movie called Speed of Thought and another one called Source Code. Go check those out. That's kind of like what's going on a little bit. Now, that's like a person who has a certain ability or is kind of harnessed in a sense, to or tuned into something. Now, what we're viewing was probably a little more closer to Source Code in the sense that you had seemingly like you had an operator who was almost like moving a joystick and targeting certain individuals, and you would see this like weird, eerie gaze at us. And it was, and the thing was, it was anyone especially who was on meth at the time just could not stop looking at us. And this includes Thunder, just sitting there, just like with this weird possessed look, gazing at us. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you, dude? I've seen you messed up before. But it got more obvious, though, when we just go out to eat somewhere and you just see these people just doing their thing. And all of a sudden, there's that gaze right at you. Like, you have this weird blank look. And very strange stuff happening. And so we go out of this area and it kind of subsides and everything. And essentially, there's, in a lot of ways, everything is clear, you know, electronically, psychically, where we're at. So everyone's just themselves. And so this is where everything just becomes apparent. And so at one point, basically was when we were done, pretty much, I was already back in California, that potential investor calls me up and says, dude, this guy is out of his mind. He's in here saying like how he's a god and he's not going to heal anyone unless they pray to him and give him money. And I'm just like, damn, dude. And he's just like, yeah, there's another guy here who was standing here when he said that. You can call him and verify that I'm not just making this up. I'm like, I don't see why you would, dude. You have no reason to like just say that, you know, because this person was, you know, very well off and he didn't need us there. You know what I mean? So that's the kind of attitude you get to when it comes down to it with him. It's like he really does think he's like a god, like how we're mentioning that complex that people have when they see the reality sort of snap around them into something a little different, you know? I've seen a lot of that. And enough to where, like I said, I couldn't even stomach it for more than, I don't know how many months, it was a handful of months when it was. Because, yeah, it was just bad. And so I knew that as soon as I had the hard information, I was going to release it. And I did do that. I posted a resignation letter from the company, which was Helidium at the time, detailing out like some of the stuff that I was saying here about the machine, about misappropriations. And then another associate of ours, actually, you know, we still work together, Jim, because he was also suckered into this and lost a lot of money. And so once he knew the truth, he bowed out as graceful as he could of making sure he can take care of what he is obligated to morally with some investors. And also detailing out what he saw, which was a lot of the same as well. So this has all been publicized now in different places. And the reason why we publicize it, and we're still here, is because it's true. It's not libel. It's not a false claim. It's the truth. Prove it wrong. That's what we say. Go ahead, prove it wrong. We have the trail, the paper trail, just like in the video. Saul's demeanor changed there for a reason, because yes, there's a trail. There's a trail of texts, there's a trail of emails, all this stuff that goes counterpoint to what he was saying. So, and he deals in, I just say, anyone who is still believing this guy, go find all of his interviews from 2012 till now, and you will hear the story change yourself. All you gotta do. Easiest way to see, pick out a liar. You know, keep hearing that story change over and over and over again.
You know, I think this is some part of the important function of the alternative media, is not only to expose the scumbaggery without the outside of the movement, but also to expose the scumbaggery within it. It's kind of like if you criticize the Catholic Church, for example, for, I don't know, allowing pedophilia to go on, let's say, for example, and then you tell a Christian about this, and instead of going, you know, it was really, really bad, they defend Christianity as a whole by saying that this one scumbaggery element within it doesn't represent everybody else. And in so doing, they ignore the scumbaggery within their own organizations and allow it to continue.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the things when I would have consults after that happened at the Conscious Life Expo, where I confronted them. And you know, some colleagues were obviously a little concerned. And I tell them, like, you guys realize that to the mainstream, that's how all of us look. Why I just got done saying to him. Also, the fact that one of us said that to, in a sense, one of our own, because they're not mainstream like, you know, some of these other corporate people are, like, they're saying, hey, that shows some integrity. It's like they kind of, I can empathize with this one because I feel the same way about a lot of these people. And in this case, he is that person. You know, and then I'll take him a step further, because this is one of the things I'd love to have more information on too, is his connection to Gordon Novell. Because we found that he had a connection to Gordon Novell, who, for those who haven't heard that name, is an ex-intelligence operative who, you know, died, you know, after an appearance on the Jesse Ventura show a year or so ago. And we found out that that Thunder did have some ties to this guy, and you can see on say, for instance, Project Camelot interviews, you can see how this guy is just changes, you know, agencies and pisses them off each time he does. So you can tell he's not necessarily of high integrity in a field that isn't of the most high integrity to begin with. So how are these two entangled? You know, I mean, Thunder told me a story about, you know, being one of Gordon's connections for drugs and women when he's on the West Coast, but someone tells me he's a little more than that. I don't know. That's speculative, but that is what he told me. So, and that's what, you know, my colleague who works with us at IEI, Holotrium and Project Camelot, Tommy, he heard that too. So a lot of us have heard this, so it's not just me saying it. And then there's also, you know, some of our other associates, I'm sure, who wouldn't necessarily want to go on record with this story, but they would attest to what we're saying, you know, privately, I'm sure. So there is some weirdness there. So it made me wonder, is this guy an unknowing patsy to disrupt the community? And it seems to me that that's the case.
Well, perhaps he will. Let's say theoretically everything that you're saying is true. Based on those conclusions, would you say he's being used, or is he using everybody else?
I would say in the sense
a little bit of both.
Yeah, both are true, but I think that some part, just guessing. I don't think he's not smart enough, and he's not good enough an actor to be putting one over on them. So I think that they put one over on him a long time ago, got him believing in something that wasn't true, and then that little lie has perpetuated into what we see now.
So the little lie is what gives him hope?
Yeah, in a sense, because he's a pathological liar, so he believes the crap that comes out of his mouth. It's amazing.
In fact, I recall having a conversation with an expert on psychopaths about this, about also drug addicts as well. And you know the parts of your brain that light up when you're lying? Right? If somebody's really hopelessly addicted to drugs and you ask them if they have a problem and they say no, the parts of their brain that would light up if they were lying don't light up. They actually believe that they don't have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can see that, and including it with little drugs in this sense. I mean, it was pretty weird, and it looks like it got a lot worse, because, like, for me, I don't really like, you know, that kind of stuff around me. So, he wasn't able to just do it freely, but he did still do it. And so once, like, you know, he's not around me, you know, it didn't seem like there's anything to stop him, so it just seemed like it got worse. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you have that going on top. Pathological liar on top of the chemical substance abuse. And so that's who's making those products. Those health products are coming from a meth head liar. So if you're wondering why they're not working, I'm guessing that's a huge reason why. And the only reason why they might work for a little bit, quite honestly, is because of the machine itself and the hard work that was put into the catalog that he's just using anyways. So it's kind of like how I made that analogy of having a guitar. Like, it's, he has a good guitar, but he can't play anything with it. You know, it's like, it looks nice. It might, it has a good tune, tonality, but he's just plinking away. He's not ripping into some cool solos, you know?
Mm. And as you said, he's not capable of explaining any of the technical aspects of what he does. Something that Thunder was saying, he was concerned about the technology being weaponized and it should be freely available to everybody. But of course, it's not free to manufacture them, and there's a lot of technical skill involved. And because there's no real manufacturing base, no real kind of advertising channel or spectrum that you can really go to with these kind of products, he's opted for multi-level marketing to a degree or something. I'm not sure I fully understand the equation. I don't know if you could elucidate.
Well, yeah, that's what an MLM person says when they want your money and they want the most money out of that money. I'm not a proponent of MLM market plan idea. I think some products do kind of need explanation, and the MLM might be it, but not this. I think that when you do it right, you should see an immediate result. That you should have be able to test it. And so this is why, like, even with our biofilm boost, test it. You know, there's ways to test it with the smog, with our smog chip, test it. But if you can't, then it's just, who cares? It's just hearsay. Even if it does work. And if it does, then make it cheap. But if you can't verify it, that's our model. If we can't verify it, we're going to make it cheap because we can't test it, but we want to get it out. Yeah, and it does cost money, but that's not necessarily what this is about, because we know the karma cash will come back. You know, so that's why we do try to give away as much as we can. So no, it doesn't have to be that way. And honestly, that's not the way it's worked. Because for instance, Power Balance. Power Balance is a $500 million a year plus company. So everyone's like, oh, they took a big lawsuit though. Yeah, that was $50 million. They lost $50 million in 1 year from their $500 million a year company. Boo-hoo. So no, they're a retailer. They're a straight retail manufacturer. And so that's one of the things I think that MLM model is just a control device that doesn't help the consumer the majority of the time, and it makes it hard for the ones that can to do their job. So and in this case with this technology, you know, my goal personally as the acting CEO right now of Intrinsic Energy Innovations is to get the infrastructure in place to where we can have a dollar sticker sitting on the grocery store hang tag thingies. Maybe it'll last, you know, 30 days, 90 days, six months, who knows, whatever. It's cheap. You can do it. Get it out. You know what I mean? And then that's if you aren't already seeing free promotional ones anywhere. All over, anyways.
I have a problem with that. I mean, because like we have this real throwaway society, and we have such a massive pollution problem and things of that nature. And there's also the planned obsolescence that comes into it, and the restricted times that our products work, and then they get thrown up and they wind up in the sea, and it contaminates the entire food chain and things like that. You know, what is it possible to create a product that would conceivably last a lifetime?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're looking into with the materials in general, like how are they going to degrade over eons of time? And can we accentuate or accelerate that decomposition? That's one of the big things that we want to do, but we only have so much money to work with right now. I'm sure you can empathize with Vinny. It's like there's a lot of things you would love to do if you could just sustain it. For instance, in that dollar sticker model, the reason why they would be out is more likely not to be thrown away is that we're going to give incentives so they get are used in addendum with another product because they'll just work better.
Mm.
So,
well, what about like Kickstarter or GoFundMe or one of those other websites? You know, like if you can do a fundraiser for some research in order to make a particular product or something that would be really good for people.
We've actually been in the early planning stages because we would love to do our own bracelet design, kind of like Power Balance does, and so we're in the design concept stage to find something a little unique, kind of fun and convenient for people to wear, and then we'll post that one up on Kickstarter, and we're also seeing at the same time, and this is one of the things that's just encouraging for us, is that there is good business people out there. And I mean good as in not just like they're good at the trade. They're actually good people. And they actually do see the things that we do. And they're saying that it's hard for them to find who to give money to, even if they mean really well. Like they might not be good at what they do, at business and keeping it going. And so we're running into more of these people and it's a slow courting phase because it's like, well, the potential here is very large. Yes. So the part about being mega million potential, yes, there is a mega million potential in this. But it has to be approached responsibly. I mean, like you mentioned, it's like you can't, like, cause you know, we're doing smog reducers here, but we're well aware that we have to look at the materials we're using and what it's going to do over time, you know, and what happens then, you know. So these are all questions. And honestly, we love consumer feedback because we want to be the company that, you know, we would like to deal with. So we're not here just to tell people how it is. It's like, why don't you tell us what you'd like to see and we'll figure out how we can accommodate that. You know, so that's part of our philosophy in both companies, Intrinsic Energy Innovations and the Holotree. In a lot of ways, the Holotree is kind of like what we consider our corporate franchise model of how, like, our resellers can do work with these products. Intrinsic Energy is, like, for instance, the website you'll see is very much like a corporate website. It's basic information about the product, contact information, and then references to resellers will be up there eventually. So we're making stuff for other people to sell too. And so, and the Holotree, even though I'm involved with Holotree and some of our other IEI associates are, you know, we're still abiding by the same reseller rules. So there's no internal competition. We can't lower the price any more than they can. And we all sign the same agreement. Because it's not about competition and being top. It's about sharing this technology in the most responsible and quick way we can.
It seems that the level of responsibility for what people create and bring into the world, I think, is somewhat lacking. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like the system has made doing business by default into something that incentivizes criminal behavior and corner cutting, more or less.
In a lot of ways, yeah, it seems to be the case because I think once they got it saturated in people's heads that the word capitalism was good, which in a sense, if you rephrase that, is another word for exploitation. You're capitalizing on something, so you're monetizing a situation. When in certain situations, fine, it's in reciprocity, but that capitalism means on misfortune too, and especially when so we're talking about direct exploitation, and then when you get into manipulation, then it's a whole other control mechanism, and I think that is what's been like sort of pervasive enough to be assimilated into corporate mindset to where now the large corporations, all they're thinking about is manipulation and exploitation at the most efficient way possible, which basically just bleeds everyone dry. And I think that there is companies, and I think there will be more large corporations that will see that they have to change or else they're going to just, no one's going to want to do business with them. It's basically what's going to happen. Because it's just not conductive to your consumers. Like, if you don't have any consumers, because you're bleeding them dry, like they have no resources to buy your stuff. So how are you gonna sustain your business? And I think that's ultimately why we're seeing so much upheaval in the world right now. Because that's pretty much what a handful of people decided to do. So then everyone's a little upset about that.
Well, it's about the apple cart, you know. Nobody wants to upset the apple cart. Nobody wants to do something original. Mm-hmm. You know what creativity is, and it's back to Ken Robinson from a TED talk that he did. In fact, I mentioned him earlier in the broadcast. He said creativity is coming up with original ideas that have value. All right, that's basically it, isn't it? If you come up with an original idea that is, hey, I'll just create money out of thin air and use it to enslave everybody because they'll think that this debt that I've got them in is real and I can get them to work for me for me doing absolutely nothing for them. That's brilliant. All right. That's creativity, isn't it? Because it's an original idea that has value, especially if you value enslaving people.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's ingenious. It really is. This game that they set up, it's brilliant, really.
You got to admire your enemy. And this comes back to Ender's Game. doesn't it? You know, as soon as you fully understand your enemy and how to destroy him, you begin to love him.
Yeah, definitely. And even what is it, The Art of War? I mean, it gets in there. Machiavellianism. A lot of it preaches the same thing, because ultimately. And this is one of the things, just how I mentioned intuitive applications, you know, this does get into very high strangeness. And when people ask about, well, what happens when you come into confrontation over there with another awareness, you know, in the sense of dual, right? Well, you have to recognize that you're actually bonding. You're actually not fighting. So you have to recognize that it's a bond. And then if you recognize what the bond's about, then you're going to come out a winner, so to speak. You know, whether you win or lose that fight, quote unquote, that's another story, but you are going to win from that. And that's one of the things that I learned, like you can say, in my experience in the military abduction phenomenon, which is how I was successful, because I didn't necessarily look at things, I didn't look at conflict necessarily as such, like you're mentioning. So it's and that really does give you a sort of edge, and it actually makes things interesting. It doesn't turn into like a victim thing, and all of a sudden you're not in real competition. You're in unison, and you're creating.
I've got that that concept going now with me, is that I've got to sort of get my life together and help a whole lot of people with a whole lot of different things and what have you. You know what I'm saying? Everybody gets through into this point of your life where you start to become really productive, and so productive, in fact, that you've got so many responsibilities to fulfill that you can't possibly fulfill them all, and you start to feel guilty about not doing it, and you, you kind of drive yourself crazy trying to be everything to everyone. And then you start to realize, oh, my God, you know, I actually need some help, you know? And it's funny, like, you start off doing something and you never get any help to do it, except once you've already started, got it going, and then people will give you help to continue or expand it, but never to begin it in a lot of cases. Have you ever found that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is, in a sense, like, you know, when leadership becomes like the thing, because that's really kind of what it is. Yeah, and I think that there's been such a perversion of the concept of authority in the social programming that most people hear that and they kind of, ugh. But authority is given, it's not taken. I mean, true authority. And so that's why people, in a sense, are obviously contributing, and why they listen to you as much as they do, because in a sense they have given authority to you as that voice, as that platform, to allow the audience to hear for themselves and not you sitting there telling people what they should hear. I mean, that's authority. That's a real authority right there. That's not you saying your opinion's right about everything. And I think that's probably why you've been so popular. That's why if you look at the people, and especially in the alternative media, who are respected, they tend to do that. And then you see the ones who galvanize. I mean, just that, like, you know, Alex Jones, for instance, it's like you see his thing and he has a certain group. A lot of us might listen to some you know, InfoWars, and they have some information, but then as soon as he goes on his opinion stuff, it's like, you know, a lot of people, we lose a lot of people there. But yeah, so it is, you know, I would agree with what you're saying, that long-winded way. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Where I'm going with this, honestly.
Well, it's okay. I mean, we've covered so much ground here. It's pretty amazing. I think that you know, we tie a lot of things together. I mean, because I think a lot of people didn't necessarily realize how, you know, how obviously our brains can do some of these things that the technology has taught, we've talked about, and then how these different disciplines in even intuitive arts like remote viewing and astral projection, how they pretty much, you know, even blur that line more about of manifestation, and, you know, where you start getting into the alchemistic nature and that mystic nature, you can say, of what is magic and what's science. And so I think that's seems to be like one of the themes here in this time. It's like, what is magic and what's science, and is there a difference?
Yeah. Well, I think life is freaking magic, isn't it?
It's freaking weird, man. I've been telling my associates how even being awake on the other side in that quote-unquote astral plane It's like, this place is still by far the strangest and most entertaining because it's so just open to choice and it moves relatively slow. Yeah. It's like, so you kind of never really know what's going to happen here, even when it looks really stable, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, I was just thinking today about partying with New World Order aware people. You know, I don't know if I don't know how often you go out partying, and I guess, you know, since I've gotten into my late 20s, haven't been doing it quite that much myself. But when I do, it's always those fun conversations that you have with other like-minded people and what have you that actually really make the party for you. It's not the music or the drinks. And I think that what happens in this movement is that we get all isolated from each other. We feel like we're misunderstood, and we have to kind of watch what we say and what have you. It's like, have you ever walked into a room with a whole bunch of people who are of the direct opposite viewpoint to you, and you try to express your views openly and honestly, and you just can't, and you know that you can't, so you stop yourself from expressing yourself openly and honestly in the first place, and void your ability to enjoy whatever experience you're having in the first place, because you're not being honest with yourself or with anybody else around you, because you can't. They're not even providing the environment for you to do that. Okay, this is actually one of my chief frustrations with life in and of itself. Wouldn't it just be nice if we all got along, man, you know, in the Big Lebowski sense of the word? But we can't, because we're all different. And this is what I find is very interesting, all this divide and conquer stuff that gets used on the entirety of humanity, doesn't it, Jerry? Doesn't it, Jerry? You know, there's all this infighting in our industries and all of this kind of thing, but sometimes the infighting is actually there for a reason. It's not because two people have a difference of opinion, it's because one person is not who they say they are, and the other person is trying to expose them for the betterment of everybody else that they could potentially fool and destroy the lives of, you know. That's the kind of difference here. And in fact, you can get accused easily of being a troll or somebody with a bad blood or anything like that by heaps of people who are just apologists and never want to really hear and see the real evidence behind accusations and whatnot, but instead want to, let's say, come up with reasons why it couldn't possibly be without looking at any of the facts of what actually happened. You know? isn't this funny?
Yep, it is, and especially when you have to observe it, and you're I've sat and wondered. I mean, sometimes some people were very much in on this situation, let's say with Thunder, and they should have known better, and they're out promoting them. It's like, what is going on there? So who is this person that they care more about money apparently and fame than obviously actually doing anything? And you see, that's the case a lot of times. A lot of people just want an audience. They just want to feel like they're special or something. And that's that whole Messiah complex once again. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. I've got kind of a complex like that, except I actually do save people's lives sometimes. You know, seriously, there's been a, one of my listeners, I like to tell this story a lot because it kind of makes sense for the point of the show and the reason why we have fun while we're on it, ladies and gentlemen. One of my listeners emailed my producer way back in the day and told me that she was going to commit suicide because everything seemed really dark and really terrible, and it felt like nobody understood her and everything was all closing in around her. You know, in a household where you got no emotional support, nobody who listens to you about this kind of thing, it makes you feel all alone, even when you're surrounded at all times. She was so depressed she was going to take her life. And until she started listening to the Vinnie Eastwood show and started laughing about these things that originally made her very sad. Okay? I think that's the pinnacle you can really achieve from any career, is if you save human life. Improve human life.
I think that's really cool because it's cool. It's good that you share that story because I know for myself, when I was on the air during radio, I'd often say, it's like, yeah, we do these kind of things for those people, especially who don't have anyone to talk to. So they can at least hear someone else's voice say these things in not like a derogatory way, because it is important, you know, for some people because they're not as fortunate as some of us, you know, especially like, you know, like I said, those of us here in Southern California, you know, we can find someone who sympathizes with us, but, you know, not so much in the Midwest here. You know what I mean? So it can be like that. And that's, it is very important. It is a service. And that's the thing, like how you said, it's your complex might, there might be a complex, but it's not a Messiah one, because you're recognizing your role in this one, this of many that we all share and do, and how we're talking about using help, you know, when we need it, because we're seeing that evolution happening and that sort of leadership developing. And then it's, and that's part of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very, it's, and as I'm saying, we're seeing more and more of this. So it's very encouraging. So I think, and I think that's really cool. You know, your story, and, you know, it's, and I hear a lot of different stories too about, you know, basically people saying how more positive their life ultimately is, even if, like, say they don't get along with their family or their old circle of friends, they just realize how much more exciting life is without the fear, without whatever. And it's just, you know, it just becomes life, and it's fun, and it's like a interactive movie. So,
yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy the stories, ladies and gentlemen, because, hey, Jerry, would you agree with me? Everybody's got a story.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. My philosophy is, if you listen to everybody's story, you get one thing that very few people ever have, because they're too busy talking about themselves. Perspective.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Jerry, for coming on with me today. Jerry Avalos, like Avalon or Los Alamos Labs, you know. TheHollowTree.com, H-O-L-O, you know, as in Hollowback Brother. In fact, there would be another good website name for you, don't you think? We've got also HollowbackBrother.com. And LosAvalosLabs.com, you know. Classic, yeah. Anyway, those are the fake websites. The real websites are intrinsicenergyinnovations.com and thehollowtree.com. Jerry Avalos, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Vinny. It was awesome.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And, of course, just a reminder, listener-supported broadcast, it does not make it onto the website without your continued financial support, a lot of which is needed right now, because we're in a larger home where we have a separate studio and a guest bedroom for activists to come stay here. Water bills and power prices and all of that kind of stuff are going out. We just paid off our internet, and, you know, X amount of things are going wrong financially right now. So if you're capable of supporting me, please do consider making a regular automatic payment into either the bank account or the PayPal there, because that regular support is kind of like, it's it keeps our head above water. You know, you don't realize that some of those people out there who donate a dollar a month, it's actually that close to the mark where that dollar matters at the end of every week. So don't sit back and think, oh, somebody else will donate in my stead. No, you do have to give something in order to make this show work. That's how I've started the show from a long time ago, and going all the way up through to now, is obligating myself to do something for people that they can't do it for themselves. You know what I'm saying? Okay, and that's what I'm unable to do, is get a job, because I have panic attacks and stuff like that. So instead, I help humanity by getting their voices out, and I need your help to do that. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, assuredly.